It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What a panel this week. Lisa Schmeiser is here. She's editor IT Pro Today. Lindsay Turrentine from CBS Interactive. Sam Moskovich from Ars Technica. And we are going to talk about everything from Bezos balls to Instagram shopping to low latency 5G and the Tickle Shackle. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 706, recorded Sunday, February 17th, 2019. Tiny, incremental, and frictionless. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for an extra 3 months free with a one-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/twit. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. From the founders of Carbonite comes the cloud storage technology. It's disrupting the industry. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click free trial, and use the offer code TWIT. And by Thousand Eyes. Companies that run in the cloud rely on Thousand Eyes. It's the place they go to first to see, understand, and improve the digital experience of their cloud-based applications and services. Do the cloud right and improve services for your customers and employees today. Visit thousandeyes.com/twit. And by Oura Ring, the most accurate sleep and activity tracker. Visit AuraRing.com and use the code TWIT for $50 off your purchase. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with a fantastic panel. Lindsay Turrentine is here. She is editor-in-chief of CNET.com. Not the other word, CNET.com. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. I actually just changed jobs. I'm running all the tech sites for CBSI.
Oh, we got a quick fix the lower third.
I just forgot to tell you.
What is your title?
It's VP of Tech Sites.
Holy cow. She's a CBS vice president, ladies and gentlemen. With Les Moonves gone, the sky's the limit. Congratulations. She's in charge of all the tech.
And I'm in charge of all the content on the tech sites at CBSI.
Is there a distinction?
Between CNET and all the tech sites?
Yeah.
Sure. There's CNET, ZDNet, Tech Republic.
You're in charge of ZDNet too?
Yeah.
Holy Tech Republic. So you're Jason Heiner's real boss now.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It couldn't happen to a nicer person.
Thank you.
So happy for you. That's wonderful. Also here, Schmeiser, Lisa Schmeiser.
Hello.
She's a Windows Enterprise side, editor IT Pro Today.
Yes.
And
I'm actually no longer with Windows Secrets. We handed the site off to Woody Lenhard, so he is steering that ship.
He started it, didn't he?
Yes.
Way back when.
It's Circle of Life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm just doubling down on the enterprise coverage.
And excellent. Anybody else want to announce job changes here while we're at? Did Sam Moskovich, did you get promoted, or are you still at Ars Technica in charge of culture?
I'm still over at Ars Technica in charge of culture, but sometimes I come onto twit.tv and hang out with some really nice folks.
Yay,
we love Sam. And they don't even offer me any whiskey in exchange.
We adore Sam. You might have seen him and Jason Howell.
One day the technology will be there.
We encourage you to supply your own whiskey and sip with us, however.
Or it'll be like the end of William Gibson's All Tomorrow's Parties, where you have the right printer and next thing you know, you just enter in the thing and out comes the product.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I don't know about that. That sounds like fun. Yeah. That's the future, though, right?
That is the future.
Yeah, okay. I'm just checking. the future's here, as he said. The future's here.
Just
it's not
evenly,
evenly
distributed.
And I thought maybe William had a kind of, like, sort of an insight. Sam has a pile of tech culture sitting behind him, and I think it's going to be part of the game during the show today to see whether it falls on his head.
No.
Whoa. I hope not.
This is centimeters away. The perspective is definitely.
Centimeters away.
If he gets bonked by Starry, Starry Night.
No earthquakes.
That's actually, if it's hard to see in the camera, but that is a 8-bit Super Mario Starry Night.
Oh, that's amazing.
You can kind of make out level 1-1 of Super Mario Brothers on it.
Wow.
That's really cool. Yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
Oh, I did not paint it.
You don't live any place that's earthquake prone, do you?
Seattle.
Oh, no.
Were you in
Snow? Thanks. You just did that. We've been waiting for someone to pull out the jinx. You did it. Thanks.
Were you in Snowpocalypse earlier?
Yeah, earlier. Now it's melt.
Meltpocalypse.
Meltpocalypse from the melting.
Yeah. So Seattle, I think there's a couple of big companies there. Boeing is one, and Amazon. is another. Amazon apparently not totally beloved in Seattle. What is the overall climate for Amazon in Seattle?
I really look forward to seeing these little drone trash cans start rolling around in our city.
You're going
to
get them.
And seeing how our citizens react to them. There's a spheres in the middle of downtown Seattle in the South Lake Union neighborhood where Amazon has a lot of buildings already. The spheres being this Amazon-leaning biosphere concept where there are plants and meeting rooms and coffee. And citizens call those Bezos's balls. That's what they're called.
Bezos's balls, which it takes a lot to say. So,
and
you know,
he plunks them down in the middle of some of the most prime real estate in all of the city. That's kind of how to sum that up.
Wow. Of course, rents are higher now because of all those Amazon people, right? And property values. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever feel like you're all just guinea pigs for Amazon, like, but didn't just kind of accept it because it's been so long?
I mean, I helped participate in the guinea pigging of their gig economy flex driver service, where when you live in a prime now city, there are people who get paid $17 an hour, give or take, to wear and tear their own cars and deliver your dog food.
Wow.
So, yeah.
We now have they've I think that they were doing that here, but now they look like they're all prime vans. Yeah. I'm sure there's still gig economy drivers.
I had somebody deliver something the other day, and it really looked like she just got out of her
Camry. It's weird when they pull up in a Corolla. Yeah, that's really weird. It's some unmarked vehicle.
Yeah, this happened to me last week. So
I've gotten to know my driver, though. She's really cute. Oh. She's fun.
Yeah, and we know each other.
And she works hard, and I think she's supporting some kids. And but, yeah, I'm glad that they got her a van.
Well, I got curious about car sales for 2018 just because I wanted to see if they're trending up or trending down. And one of the things that happened in the past year is more people bought SUVs and minivans.
That's been happening every year for the last decade.
Well, no,
it's actually going up.
It was a little bit of a flip. It's good news for the car companies because it's higher margins. But what I was wondering is if people are buying these cars because they see them as investments in the gig economy.
Yeah.
Since if you can carry more passengers or more cargo, then you can go work for Amazon or Lyft.
Sure. That's why we bought an Audi A8L so I can drive a little Uber and Lyft in my spare time. And I think it's nice. People like the comfort in the back. It's lots of leg room. And I've been mostly positive. Mm. Tipping's still a problem. The only reason I bring this up is because Amazon is not going to be in Long Island City after all. I don't know. What do you think? It seems a little like I'm taking my ball and going home. In fact, I think that's what Mayor Blasio said on Meet the Press today.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Amazon was like, oh, okay, this whole past year of them posturing about this seemed like much ado about nothing.
There was a huge search
but it was a great data collection.
They got information about all these cities.
They got everybody under NDA. They have all of this information that their competitors do not have. They can now use that.
But what?
And they also know what cities are willing to do to have them there.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and that's, of course, the issue at hand was that there were $3 billion in tax incentives. Yeah. That doesn't mean money that they were giving to Amazon. It means that they would pay much less in taxes over a period of time.
But, you know, the timing for this was especially, I don't want to say unfortunate, but it felt a little tone deaf because we've seen such a stratification of economies and jobs. And so for Amazon to come in and say, guess what? We're bringing these jobs in.
25,000
jobs. You probably
jobs.
Won't be able to get one of these jobs. And you also probably will not be able to afford your rent once we're done.
Yeah, so we're going to push. That's what happened in Seattle, right?
And
we pushed you out.
And this has been percolating through New York for the past decade, too, where there's been a growing sense that people are getting pushed out thanks to the influx of money that's washing through the global economy. And so you had a lot of people who were like, wait a minute, this isn't my city anymore. And you've given it to a corporation that's not going to give us anything in return.
So I sort of wondered if New York actually was too much there was too much employer competition for Amazon. And in the end, in New York, it's pretty easy to take a job with one of a bazillion large corporations. Amazon couldn't be king in that setting. Virginia, maybe a little bit more, especially with so many former government workers not cycling back into government work right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the places they picked, New York and D.C. They picked those because they wanted toeholds in finance and retail up in New York, and then they wanted to make sure that they could provision the government with the rest of the federal contractors inside the Beltway. And that's and in Virginia, that's just the cost of doing business as far as everybody's concerned.
Northern Virginia is the other HQ, too, that they are going ahead
with. In the erstwhile Crystal City, I believe it's being renamed. I cannot remember what they're calling it, but when I was finishing high school in that area, the development was called Crystal City. Hmm. And it's right next to National Airport. It's on at least one major metro line, the blue. It's really close to the Pentagon. And thanks to security regulations and things like that, if you're going to service those contracts, it helps to have people on the ground there.
Amazon says that's going to proceed as planned.
Yeah.
You said the jobs would not go to New Yorkers, the 25,000 jobs? Who would they go to?
They're going to go to college graduates, or they're going to go to high-skilled tech people.
They're too skilled.
They're going to go to high-skilled tech people who would otherwise be working in the Bay Area or in Seattle, right, or in D.C. or in Austin or possibly Atlanta.
So it's a gentrification of Long Island City, yeah, that the residents, mm-hmm, didn't seem to want.
Yeah.
The governor wanted it. The mayor wanted it. But there was groundswell of, yeah, of opposition.
A lot of civic resistance.
But it feels like Amazon was a little bit of a snowflake here. Like they said, oh, you don't like it? Okay, fine, we'll leave.
Yeah.
Couldn't they take a little heat?
I felt maybe they overplayed their hand. I don't know.
They did. I mean, yeah, by choosing two cities in the first place, they, yeah, spread themselves out. I mean, we all thought it was going to be one, and then, yeah, it was two, and then they...
Three, actually, because they're also building that 5,000-person center in...
Is that Austin?
Memphis.
Memphis.
Because Tennessee, between Memphis and Knoxville, those are ground zero for FedEx is there. I believe UPS has a pretty big outpost there. That's where you have a lot of logistics talent. And so if Amazon's going to double down on that part of their market, they're going to want to be where the aggregation of talent is. And...
pretty soon, everything's going to be owned by Amazon. I mean, what is what?
Yeah, Nashville's becoming a huge draw for college graduates. So that's another place where it'll be easy to aggregate talent and to poach it from other companies, because there's not that much difference between the cities in Tennessee. So you used to work at FedEx, move to Nashville where Amazon's going to be.
So I'm just curious, Sam, because you live in Amazon town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have context to offer. I did work for them for 4 months. That's a Googleable story. Readers, feel free to type my last name in Billy Ray Cyrus. It's a long, funny tale. That was back in 2007. But
having, do I still have an achy, breaky heart after those years?
It's a great story, I promise you. But the thing is, this is a company that has proven in its time in Washington State to not contribute much more than the bare minimum.
Yeah.
In terms of one of the biggest stories that came out of the past year in Seattle was a huge push, an organic push from some of the really, really radically left-leaning city council members for a head tax that basically established a certain amount of more tax for companies in Seattle who make certain amount of money per year and have a certain number of employees per year. We're a regressive state. We don't have state income tax. Seattle has a tax shortfall all of the time. Amazon was one of the prime leaders in terms of funneling money into opposition groups, doing it in such a way that journalists had to dig up and find that was the case.
Isn't there a Seattle city tax of people making more than $250,000 a year, or am I mistaken?
I can't help you with the entire tax code, so yeah. Sure.
Can you help me, Sam? I haven't done my taxes yet.
Oh yeah, we need Sam to do our taxes.
Billy Ray Cyrus will talk about it.
Yeah.
But it's a company known for a lack of general giving back, either in arts or in city and state value, in that way. And then also the hiring does tend to just bring in a lot of people from out of state, mm-hmm, who are the pattern tends to be buy up in the middle of the city, disrupt, and then leave. It's a lot of people who come in for 2, 3, 4 years, cash out, get burnt out, and get the heck out. And the result has been, it's a hard thing to write about. The Stranger was my former employer here in Seattle, an alt-weekly paper. And they have chronicled at length a lot of the sort of cultural and human cost that comes with Amazon. So I think there's a lot of that gets lost in the headlines when a city like New York says, mm-hmm, what is this employer going to do? What are they going to do with their money? And what's the cultural impact going to be? So that's been the biggest thing I've noticed. I've been here only 12 years. I'm also sort of a transient. But when I moved here, I could afford to live on $11,000 a year scrapping by, and that Seattle is no longer anywhere near that kind of place.
So the city,
Sam, I have a quick question. How, because you've got Amazon, Microsoft used to be the big tech gorilla in the area. How are Microsofties perceived in Seattle relative to Amazon people?
I think there's a perception more of philanthropy and more of spreading out. There's also the bridge culture, like the East Siders. If you go east of Seattle, you end up in towns like Bellevue and Redmond, where Microsoft has a lot of campuses.
Yeah.
So I think that to some extent sort of changed it. It was a lot of local engineer culture people, mostly because Boeing had been here sort of establishing that culture for decades. So it wasn't, you know, there are lots of international hires that came in as a result to diversify the technological culture within Microsoft, which I think is good. But then Microsoft has generally been more on the up and up and giving money to University of Washington, giving money to city and state initiatives. The perception is generally, yeah, there's an economic impact that's both good and bad. And Amazon has been perceived as a lot less balanced.
Well, that was my other question, was if there was a really tight tie between UW and Microsoft, and that helped foster a feeling of being better integrated into the Seattle as a community than maybe Amazon has.
I remember a college boyfriend of mine got recruited, or was, you know, he didn't end up going, but he was recruited by Microsoft out of school in Boston. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of that going on, but I think that it was
Cambridge,
kind of
it's
new.
Okay. I don't want
Cambridge
you to hold back.
At Harvard.
Yeah. I often say I went to school in Connecticut for the same reason.
It's just you're like I don't want to talk about it. But they did recruit at the time in the 90s, mm-hmm. a very long time ago. Yeah. They did recruit people from out of state heavily. It was the same thing, college graduates from out of state. But I think that it was the boom hadn't quite happened yet in Seattle, so it didn't seem bad.
Is it a culture clash? Yeah. Is it that these San Francisco complains all the time, and part of it's money, part of it's you just being forced out. The rents are too high; you can't buy a house. But also, part of it's culture. Like, you don't want a monoculture. San Francisco, which used to be this great diverse city, has become a monoculture.
Yeah, really, it's so boring now.
It's boring. It is, and you go out in San Francisco to a bar or a restaurant. Mm-hmm. We went to that Tech TV reunion. Mike remembers that, and. It was just a bunch of yuppies from startups around, and it was cold, so they were wearing blankets. The bar provided them with blankets, and it just seemed like it was like, go home. This is San Francisco. Get rid of the blanket.
The hiring that happens at companies like Amazon, I think, drives a cultural glut where you have folks who are 29 to 35 who have a ton of money, who are primarily male, and they've got a lot of money, and they're hitting up these condos in the middle of the city. So it's like expensive addictions to whiskey. That's sort of the culture I've perceived from my friends who date around Seattle, and they flip through apps, and it's just boring guys who think having whiskey and going hiking once a month is their personality.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Go hiking,
Sam,
at least once a month.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you talking?
I'm used to this in Seattle.
Well, I mean, as long as we're piling on, the story came out this week also that Amazon, despite making gobs of money, $11.2 billion in 2018, double what they made the year before, paid zero in federal income taxes. That's, of course, because they have losses, right, that offset the taxes. This is the law. They're not breaking the law. They're not stealing. But at the same time, it's the same kind of sense of you're taken. You've built a business, an incredibly profitable business. Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, Amazon at one point worth more than $1 trillion, and you're not giving back. Mm-hmm.
It is I always try to look for the silver lining when I think about Bezos. He's always gone for the long game, very long game. I'm hoping one day he wakes up and he pulls a Bill Gates and is like, all right, time to put all of this back. I have seen nothing.
Gates didn't do that, right?
He didn't do anything for... Remember? Yeah. We would talk about this all of the time about 15 years ago.
He's woke. And now he's woke Bill Gates, where there was an interview I was reading in the Los Angeles Times this morning where he and Melinda were saying, look, they're talking about there's a nationalist case to be made for globalism because it can boost economies. Data is inherently gender biased, so we need to find ways to eliminate that.
You're talking about the letter that he and Melinda sent out.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, this is a thing he does now. This is also the dude who released a bunch of live mosquitoes in Davos.
Yeah,
all.
But remember, Andrew Carnegie built a lot of libraries, too. I mean, you get older, you start to fear death, mortality.
Well, I don't think Bezos will. I think he may end up either like funding a massive cryogenics effort, so he's like a head in a jar.
He's not
like going to
die. That's the problem.
Or he's going to like we're going to discover he's been building a moon base.
Sure, but he has also been investing heavily in journalism.
Yeah.
To his credit.
It's Washington Post.
Yeah. I mean, he's been pouring money into it, and they have been growing quickly and doing
really good work.
And in fact, they were the ones to report this morning.
Yeah.
Or yesterday.
No, they did.
To report this tax
right.
issue.
Isn't it interesting? But on the other hand, I also feel like...
To the credit of both the Washington Post and Jeff Bezos, because
he wants it to be profitable, though he's not investing in the Washington Post.
But you contrast that, for example, BuzzFeed had that series of high-profile layoffs, and I kept checking the site to see how they were covering their own story because it was a story. They didn't cover it. They didn't have anything until after they were able to unionize, and then they finally ran it as a news story. Yeah. And so I'd say that Washington Post is doing a lot of things right, whether or not Bezos is a hands-off leader or
I have heard that he is hands-off. That he is totally hands-off, other than the business part of it. That but, he has not been sticking his nose into the journalism.
Yeah, but you contrast that with something like, again, how BuzzFeed didn't cover its layoffs, which were a huge story.
Sure.
And
I think a lot of the people who would have covered the layoffs got laid off. I'm not joking. I think that actually is
they really
happened.
Yeah, they decimated the news desk.
It was rough.
We'd cover it, but nobody's left.
Yeah.
All right. You know, this is kind of the tenor of the year, and also somewhat of the second half of 2018 was the big five. The fangs are too big and too irresponsible. And we've got to do something about Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft.
Hey, remember when Microsoft got busted for antitrust just for bundling a browser with their operating system?
Oh, we were talking about that the other day.
Yeah.
Right. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. It was
misguided. That was misguided.
But
it went on for years.
Uh-huh.
It ended up in Europe with the ballot, browser ballot, where you installed Windows for the first time. It said, well, which browser would you like to use?
Mm-hmm.
Which was a dopey solution.
Mm.
It didn't change anything. So that was misguided.
Oh, I don't necessarily think it was guided. I just think that it was.
You look at the bar that they had to. You look at the bar that was set for, is this an antitrust case or not? And then you contrast that
nowadays
with the way companies are operating. And you have to ask yourself, why are we not seeing
Europe's still going after these guys.
Europe is, yeah. And Google recently released guidance saying our profits are likely to get hit thanks to GDPR and increased regulation because it's going to affect how much information we can gather and then monetize.
I think that's true for almost any major international company is being affected by GDPR.
Well, the thing I'm going to be wondering about is how are they going to lean on American users and consumers to make up the profit shortfall? Because we don't have those protections, so we are basically sitting ducks as users.
Oh, you think we're going to end up paying the fines, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, at least Amazon bought Eero. Okay.
I know a lot of people who are not very happy about.
Anything to say about people who work at Eero?
I think that this I can't quite see how it's going to come together yet, but. I have an Eero router, and I have all this. I have all the.
So I should disclaim: Eero's a sponsor.
Yeah.
And I too have an Eero router. I love my Eero.
I love mine too. It's new. I'm enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of potential for Amazon's digital assistant to get much better, and this may be a way to put legs into sensing what else is going on in the home in a more sophisticated way. Than Amazon
the upside
is able to do for
the upside
users.
Is clear.
The upside for them is clear.
But
sure.
But isn't it also concerning? I mean, this is more of
the
same.
Nothing is neutral anymore.
Well, your Eero knows, as you know, if you look at the Eero app, it knows every single device that's in your house.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Exactly. And how much you use it, when it's on, when it's off, when you're home, because you join the router, when you leave.
Yep.
And Amazon will have all that data.
You know why Amazon wants that? Because Google is at this point, I'm neck and neck with Amazon in terms of fingers into the smart home.
Yeah.
Google already knows everything about you.
That's true.
Google knows all that stuff, and Amazon is at a disadvantage. And it's kind of too bad that both of these platforms know this much about you, but that is why Amazon's doing it. They need to know as much as Google does.
My Amazon birdies tell me basically that just the amount of money that Echo devices drives means there are so many different teams that are all battling to pitch and make whatever the next thing is, meaning there's just skunk works going on for all kinds of different stuff. And we saw a hint of that at an event last year where they unveiled the Amazon Echo wall clock and the Amazon Echo microwave.
By the way, the clock was just recalled this week. They stopped making it.
It wasn't
working. I think what I'd actually keep an eye on, too, is the Amazon Small Business Bundle, where you set up your mesh wireless network plus some voice-activated speakers, and it's things like schedule this client meeting, send out this email at this time, and you help people automate small home offices.
Sam, do you think
And then you tie them into the Amazon cloud that way, because the cloud can host everything. And this is how they build out their non-retail customer and keep them that way, is by tying into the hardware.
And compete with Google, which is
think,
already
Sam, the Eero acquisition has to do with Echo? You think that that's
absolutely 100%,
extending the Echo ecosystem?
Meaning that there's the purse strings are totally open. So if anybody on that team says, we're going to create the total perfect thing, we want to be able to ship somebody something in a box via Amazon.com, everything that they need to continue to do all this stuff that gets promoted, even if that ends up polluting and diluting this pool of IoT nonsense, and make, in my opinion, makes it more complicated. Everyone still wants to be the one stop, and they're getting closer and closer with how many people bought up those dots. Dot sales absolutely set Amazon on a 5-year path of just capitalizing on that while they have that.
I have that Echoes in every room of my house. And I have Eero's in many of the rooms of my house. Yeah.
I cannot believe you do that. That's insane. That's so much data.
I don't have any smart home devices activated in my house.
Yeah. Really? I shouldn't have those?
Because, well,
I also have Google Homes and I even have a Cortana in my living room.
With the caveat, it's a personal decision, personal decision and all that. But
maybe I'm uninformed.
None of the Fong companies are forthcoming with what they're collecting, when they're recording and when they're not. How that data is secured, how it's tied to your ID or not to your tied to your ID, how it's bundled, who it's sold to.
What are they going to do with this data?
They don't give you the
What are you worried about that they're going to do?
They market to you in ways that you don't necessarily want. And I think
what if my Echo one day says, "Oh, hi Leo, I see that one of your Hue lights has burned out. Would you like to buy another one?"
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, they're already on that way.
Is that a bad thing though?
Not necessarily. I mean, there are other privacy implications when it comes to law enforcement.
Well,
basically the most revealing stuff is when you see these subpoenas that get sent to Amazon.
I carry in my pocket a ton of data.
Yeah,
I would submit you all carry in your pocket a microphone and a camera that's always connected to the internet. So honestly, does it really matter that I also have a microphone in my living room?
Yes.
I think it's the TOS that you sign when you install that Amazon device. That is what's scarier. I mean, with my cell phone, I do everything I can to lock down microphone and camera access, and Lord knows how
you are so rare though, Sam. I think that for 98% of people, Leo's point is absolutely apt. Like you're being heard anyway.
You're being heard anyway, and it is almost
inescapable.
Yeah. But it's
the reason I bring this up is when you talk about law enforcement. Law enforcement is not going to subpoena my Echo, or maybe they are because they have it, but they most likely they're going to go after my phone.
I guess what I mean is that the subpoenas sort of indicate how much wealth of data they have. Mm-hmm. But again, you mentioned GDPR. How do they make up for that data shortfall? Mm-hmm. I mean, once you have as much data as Amazon has about your shopping habits, about your geolocation, depending on the app you have installed, about when you talk to your phone or when you talk to your Echoes, the more of these triangulation points they have, the further they go. And that doesn't mean it's going to necessarily be anti-consumer or terrible or dystopian, but it's just a whole giant world out there of how crazy, weird, bad, and penetrative this stuff can be in ways we don't know. And then once every 9 months, we see a story from a company like Facebook that says, whoopsie, some of that data went away in a way we didn't mean. Sorry about that. I agree. It's no big deal, though.
Facebook plays fast and loose with that data. I don't have a Facebook account anymore because of that. That I agree with. But also, I don't need a Facebook account, and I never gained anything of real value from it. Mm. But if my Amazon Spot can say, hey, I noticed your whiskey bottle's a little low. Would you like me to order another one? That's valuable.
It is valuable unless... Here's the counter argument. I tend to agree with you, and or at least I'm very fatalistic about it. Like, this ship has sailed. I can tell that my data has been triangulated so many times.
You think we should give up?
No, I don't think we should give up. That doesn't mean I haven't given up. But in any case...
I've given up, but that's my job.
I think that there's an opportunity cost that comes into play here. So Amazon may say, hey, your whiskey's out. Do you want to order more? You may say, oh, yeah, sure. But the reality is there might be another whiskey out there that you like more, that costs less, that you're not looking for because Amazon made it too convenient for you. And that's a cost that I think is a real consumer cost that we're all going to start to feel over time.
We are already seeing that because there have been research reports published where it's Amazon already weights search results so that their choices for you based on your buying history and based on cost per unit are weighted higher than what might actually be the best consumer value.
That's right. You may not get the lowest price because you spend more money. So we're going to give you in fact, algorithmically, we might even bump the price before we serve you the page.
Exactly. So you have that. Again, it comes down
to... That's a little scary, I have to admit.
And that is a literal cost.
Yes. That's a cost.
And there's another thing to consider, and this was actually a piece that Heather Kelly wrote for CNN this past week, which is if all of these companies are making money off of the data that you're generating, why aren't you getting a cut? It's your data. It's your product. Why are they repackaging you and selling you back to you?
I just want them to pay federal taxes. How would it work to give me a cut of my information? I mean, there are moves, but I feel like they're tilting at windmills. I feel like they're quixotic. Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, has a company that he started that will somehow magically take all your personal data, lock it away, and then mm-hmm. dole it out to the companies for payment. I don't see that ever happening or working.
I want somebody to sell me a TV for $200.
That's what I want.
Yeah, but what kind of TV would you get for $200?
A TV, very nice, that, a TV very nice, that watches me.
A very nice TCL TV that's made in China, as a matter of fact. Mm. They're surprisingly inexpensive.
Oh, they're so inexpensive.
And they track everything that you watch and do.
So what? I don't care.
What
do I care if the Chinese know I watch The Umbrella Academy? What does that matter? Seriously.
This is when you start getting the advertisements. If you like this comic, then you'll
Look,
like that one.
We're already getting advertisements on every possible surface.
I mean,
I would rather have advertisements about stuff at least I'm interested in buying.
What's actually interesting, I'm a KQED supporter, and I got a PIN code for a pledge-free stream during this last pledge.
Oh, hallelujah, finally.
Because if you donate a certain amount, then they'll give you a PIN, and you don't have to hear those poor guys going, and we'll give you the Eitan hand.
Just out of curiosity, who sponsors Masterpiece Theater? Viking Cruises. You know why? I know that because they play a goddamn ad on this ad-free service every time you watch the show.
It's like, you've got me. I'm just watching Rick Steves. I don't know who's
sponsoring. Yeah, see, that's the thing. Rick Steves, I bet he has. So public television and radio, and I don't fault them. They still make great content, but they're not ad-free.
No.
They're no longer ad-free. And pledges, just those are the worst. Thank God they're giving you a chance.
That's because they get no public support anymore besides from individual users.
I understand that they have to do it.
Yeah.
I know that they have to do it. Look, you're going to see ads no matter what you do, right? Unless you, I don't know, if you get offline and you don't watch TV.
This is a little bit of a slight change of subject or a shift slightly to the left. Mm-hmm. I will say the upside of all this triangulation is that the ads I get,
are better,
especially on Instagram.
Oh, they're too good. I stopped Instagram.
I spend too much money.
I'm wearing Instagram underwear right now. I had to stop.
Instagram underwear.
I had to stop. I would wake up at 3 a.m. and buy stuff. Right?
Yes. And that's why the Instagram app is genius, because people are like, this is actually fun. There is an app, you know, they have now the shopping app.
Mm-hmm.
And people.
They do?
Yeah. There's a separate Instagram shopping app. Because people like
it
so much. It's so effective. I mean, so there's that. That's the upside.
I buy more things. U.S. consumer debt has hit new highs.
You know, in a way, this is a digital divide, the haves and the have-nots, because people can afford to, can pay for a ad-free or less ad experience.
Which is what I do, to be honest.
You pay for it.
I do. Well, and it was interesting because we stream almost all of our media at this point. Ooh. And when we were watching live TV we were watching the Super Bowl. That's what we were watching. And the ads came on, and all of us were just kind of transfixed. Just, what?
Because we've never seen an ad.
I hate ads. No,
well,
I hate ads on TV.
Because we're like soft and vulnerable.
Exactly.
From not being exposed constantly. But it's,
Ars Technica.
It takes a lot.
I pay for Ars Technica for the same reason.
We not only, sorry to interrupt, not only do we block ads, but we also, when you pay for it, we also block all the trackers, meaning all that activity that you don't necessarily want companies calling. I have a very long answer to why we should care about that, but otherwise the show would go on to 7 hours.
No, let's hear it. Why should
minutes.
We care about that?
The shortest answer, in my opinion, is that tech companies are building to total automation, total machine learning, and they're going to go in directions that we cannot even predict that may really benefit from some sort of government surveillance, and want to do everything they can to line all of that up one piece at a time until larger companies can take control of our day-to-day lives and profit off of it. In that same way, when we're just saying, why am I not getting money for giving Amazon these little bits of data? I think that's going to go up to 1,000 to 1,000,000% more because of the kind of cobbling of data and what that leads to for the few giant companies who have all of that in their servers and all of us who do not.
You're exactly right. It's exactly why they will not be regulated out of this, because ultimately in this post 9/11 world, governments want this kind of information. And so they're very happy to let these guys continue to do what they do.
And there's plenty of sci-fi out there about giant corporations running things. I mean, oh my God, is Shadowgate the one that's based in Seattle? It's a pen and paper RPG where it's corporations, not governments. I mean, you know,
William
Gibson, like
Neuromancer, that's the world of Neuromancer is run by corporations, right?
And if you look at the Blue Ant trilogy, that's the other thing he's positing, is that corporations are effectively setting cultural agendas.
So I interviewed, and I mentioned it several times, but it's new to you guys, so I'll say it again. Shoshana Zuboff's new book is Surveillance Capitalism. Excellent. Highly recommended. And that's exactly what she's concerned about. Mm-hmm. Initially we made the deal with the devil because we get free services in return for ads. Mm-hmm. Eventually we got free services and tracking in return for targeted ads. And even at that point, I don't have so much of a problem with it. The next step is sort of what Instagram's doing, which is predicting behavior. This is an excellent book, Predicting Behavior. And then final step is influencing behavior. And I think we're rapidly moving to that point where they convince you to do something, to buy something, to behave a way, to vote a certain way.
Oh, sure.
Using these
well, you look at how corporations have taken political stances at this point. It's because they've been able to commodify people's impulses and philosophies.
Right. And, or they, at the very least, look at the last elections, enable enable shaping our behavior.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, and that is obvious, that our behavior is shaped by the bubbles we place ourselves in and then what we allow... Yeah, what we allow to be kept out.
Facebook will pay lip service to this, but they don't really, you know, they're dealing right now with this issue of whether they allow vaxxers to continue to post on Facebook.
This is anti-vaxxers. Fascinating topic, I think.
And this is a tough one for Facebook because...
Public health versus free speech.
Yeah.
Direct opposition. Yeah.
And honestly, I don't think Facebook wants to ban anything because
It's not in their best interest.
It's not in their best interest. It's not in their corporate interest. So they're walking this very fine line. They're afraid of government regulation. I agree with you, Sam. It's highly unlikely because there is a very tight partnership between the data gatherers and the panopticon in the government that wants to see everything. So maybe they don't need to worry about it. They also are worried about public opinion. And clearly, a lot of what Facebook does is to try to assuage public opinion.
Have they
made a decision yet on this anti-vax issue? I think they did ban a few anti-vax groups. The problem is
the anti-vax groups are now spreading information among each other as to how to circumvent the conversation.
God, if only there was a vaccine to stop this.
It's a really interesting problem, and it's just one of a million of these because it's not. I mean, and society itself doesn't agree on what to do about this.
I don't think Facebook has finally decided yet. It is definitely a public health concern.
We're having measles outbreaks in Seattle, I think, in Texas. Babies are dying.
Well, here's a question. Historically speaking, has Facebook ever engaged with a social issue proactively, or has it usually been in reaction to negative press or negative sentiment?
I think they have. Their emergency system, right, where you're in a disaster.
I think they didn't
do that in response to anybody. They just thought, oh, this is a good idea.
Are you sure it wasn't a way for them to gather data? So that no, seriously.
You're so paranoid.
I'm not paranoid.
Mark that you're safe.
Facebook exists to gather data, repackage it, and monetize it. So if they roll out a system where people self-check in after a disaster, how do you think that, what do you think that they could sell later?
They're sitting there evilly.
I don't think anyone's doing it evilly.
I think that what happens is that there is an actually legitimately positive human intention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then over that gets used. And then there's a meeting where you say, let's talk about the successes of this program. They quantify the successes. Yeah. And somebody in that meeting says, hey, this could help us meet our goals.
Yes.
Let's try to use this as a target. It's not nefarious.
It's not malicious.
No.
It's not malicious. It's merely, hey, this serves our company's needs. And there's not an incentive to put it into a bigger context.
That's the problem. And I think Zuboff brings this up. Uh-huh. It's kind of happening in just the natural course of events. It doesn't take evil people to create this. It just happens.
And this is the concern with having a few extremely large companies in charge of pretty much everything we do. It's that I think what happens is that very rarely, although it's possible that there is a malicious leader in charge of those companies, it's really more that human behaviors get amplified in any system.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And human behaviors are self-serving.
We're seeing that happen. Technology
is an amplification.
Well,
you're also talking about how people stay in their bubbles. And I have lost track of the number of B2B conferences I've gone to where I sit in rooms with really smart people who are really devoted to the projects they do. And they say things excitedly like, once the system's in place, we'll be able to eliminate 70% of shipping jobs and keep cargo more secure. And when I ask, well, what happens to the people who used to work in shipping? They say very excitedly, they're free to do more imaginative and creative work. And that's what I'm thinking. That is what you would like to do if you were freed from your current job. But you cannot presume that everybody approaches work the same way you do and gets the same thing out of it.
Well, and everybody would like to do that, but we so far haven't found a way to make creative work more profitable.
We don't have a full employment plan for creatives.
And maybe not everybody who works does so because they derive their personal identity from it. Maybe sometimes people just work because it funds the stuff that they do find meaningful. But these are not ideas that are in people's bubbles. And so these folks in tech are well-meaning, but they're coming at it from one really specific reference point, as opposed to taking a look at all of the possible reference points that will be affecting real people in real life.
I want to get back to Leo's kind of initial question about Facebook's ability to be proactive. And we have example after example after example of no. I think discrimination in advertising is the biggest one that just kept on coming back. And Washington State, our attorney general, was the one who really just slammed down and said, we've got you saying you're going to do more, waiting a few months, saying you're going to do more. And then we have more proof after those two announcements. You're still not
being
proactive.
It's almost a parody at this point. Yeah. You can you could just see it happening. Yeah.
And so it's just a company that has never at any point really risen up and said anything about this is a story that's not in the headlines yet and we really care about it, unless it's them saying we really swear virtual reality is going to be a big deal. Like that's as far as they've gotten in being proactive is here's a thing that we've invested in and we swear you're going to want to spend money in it. That's like as far as they get for being proactive about their sense of future and responsibility.
Sure. I mean, I think that Elon Musk is sort of a weird exception to that. His proactiveness is often just kind of spouting off, but he is genuinely concerned about things energy. That could make him a lot of money.
More microdosing throughout the tech industry would probably be a good thing.
No, I think the Elon Musk example is great because if you put aside all the weird stuff he's done over the last
year. He follows me everywhere
year.
I go, though, my Tesla. It records every move I make, what pedals I push,
but
what buttons I push.
But this is a dude who's genuinely concerned about energy supply, clean energy, renewable energy.
And AI.
I agree.
Yeah. And the ramifications of AI.
Although, you know, there's that whole, by the way, AI can now write your journalism stories better than people can.
Sure.
That came out this week, and that was a little unnerving.
Honestly, I would hate to say, well, Elon's good and Mark's bad.
No.
Because, honestly, I think they all come from a similar ground of being.
Yeah.
Where they believe in technology, they believe ultimately technology make lives better, and they don't. I think your bubble in that description is actually very good. They just don't. Is that yours?
I mean, I think it's our entire industry.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We can take joint ownership.
In general, that living in the bubble is what keeps them from seeing the consequences of what they see is just, well, this is good. We're changing the world for the better. And I, you know, as a technology user, was very bullish about the future initially, right? The internet's going to democratize. It's going to eliminate gatekeepers. And was not clear, and probably should have been, what the consequences of true free speech are, and this amplification. What I didn't know about, I don't think people thought about, was the amplification. Sure. That's the power.
It is the power. And then people who have power already through money and through access get more power to amplify.
Right.
It's concentrated.
This is too long a question to give you. I only want a minute or two answer. Is there any hope?
Oh, the hope has been established already by an internet. I would point to myself as a 37-year-old who was able to access a completely different worldview in life outside of a very small suburban town by simply clicking around and finding like-minded folks
we
and stories. And I think that has grown and grown and grown. Those systems are still out there. They're still decentralized, wonderful computer systems that let us do some really cool things and become more human and more connected.
So
that's
you
not
think
to
it's
say.
Possible to turn to take the technology we have and make it better? Make it more human, make it more fair,
I think,
without giving it up. You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I mean, my dream is a completely decentralized version of social media that isn't terrible, that everyone actually chooses to use. And I think it could happen within the next 10 years. I don't see that happening tomorrow or 1 year from now.
That
but
was
I do
on
really
Mastodon.
Believe.
I loved Mastodon, but it's not exactly.
I mean, there's like 27 different skeletons of that not working. But I do believe that is a large step forward for us as a society and as governments all coming together and trying to find an infrastructure that's a little more open and free in that way.
Well, we do now see the consequences, but maybe it's too late.
I think that my hope, and this is a little dark, my hope lies outside of the world that I live in right now. So I don't think that our world is over. I think that the society that we have built in the way that we have built it will not last forever.
We screwed up.
We've screwed it up. And there is somebody somewhere in a small town in Indonesia right now who's thinking about something that we don't know
and
we don't understand
yet.
A plague,
a nuclear war, a zombie attack?
No, not necessarily, but cultures come and go and rise and fall. And we may have done a really great job at some things, and now somebody else is going to do a really great job at other things.
Usually those come with bloodshed and a massive loss of life.
Sure, but not necessarily.
Not always, sometimes it's...
Look at most of Europe. Europe has just had, you know, like...
It's true.
Like Britain, There was like Dickensian Britain, and that was a little rough. But not completely destroyed.
We're seeing the end of European colonialism, as it were, because you could argue that America was pretty much the last wave of that. And if you look at our actions from the 19th and 20th century, we were doing the same thing where we were acting like our job is to export our culture, our values.
I think you could say the consequences of industrialism and colonialism are two world wars, millions of deaths.
But I think when you have a group, but you have generations now who are aware of the fragility of the planet and the finite amount of resources we have left. And but
there's my point. And that's why we're going to not have a cultural revolution. We know how painful and bloody that can be.
We may be
in the beginning of some terrible economic decay right now. I mean, you look around our country, the haves versus the have-nots.
It's terrible.
The have-not may continue to grow to a point where we simply do not have the power we used to.
It could be war-related, or it could just be decay. Guy in Indonesia.
I think it's infrastructure decay, because you take a look at the fact that we don't spend in this country to keep up roads. We don't spend on public health in a way that guarantees that children and young adults are as healthy as they could be or are launched into adulthood as productive
way more death
in
childbirth.
Society.
I like that you asked about the future of how technology will affect us and expect us to only have 1 or 2 minutes. I didn't even think about talking about World War III entirely on computers.
I think the point that I was getting around to eventually, since technology has disintermediated specialization and it's redistributed economic opportunity, it's going to really usher in a whole new cultural model.
Well, that's what we were hoping for, but I don't see any sign of that.
Again, the future is not evenly distributed. You just have to look for it outside of where we are now. I think we're all products of the 20th century at this table.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you're not logged into the right Twitter accounts over there, Leo. The culture's happening.
I'm logged off Twitter, too. But I'm with you. I do feel like decentralized, open is the future. It is doable. It is out there.
Yeah.
But I feel like it also is facing incredible resistance from two forces. One, of course, the moneyed economic forces of Facebook, Amazon, Google. And the other, frankly, is, I think, a population, global population, that is afraid of disruption, of famine, of war, and will settle for a surveillance economy as long. Look at China. China's a perfect example in order to pursue order. Do you know what the number one app in China right now is? Number one, beating Didi, beating WeChat. It's a propaganda tool from the Communist Party called Shuixi Changguo, which translates to study powerful country. It is number one in China. We know about the social credit scores.
Or do they say it's number one in China?
No, it is number one. Apple says it's number one. Is Apple? It's number one, you could say, because, well, if you're anybody in China, you're going to download it. It doesn't mean you're going to love it or use it, but you better well damn well download it, right? They know whether you're downloading it.
Sounds like a popular president getting 99.9% of the vote.
Yeah. But I don't think it's like that in China. I think that the vast majority of the populace, not the Uyghurs, there's definitely pockets of resistance. But in return for modernization, this is kind of the story of China.
Well, this is the Three Gorges Dam.
Exactly.
I remember when the Three Gorges Dam was built back in the 1990s, when a reporter from Rolling Stone went and was like, "You're wiping out villages in this gorgeous landscape." And in return, the guide was like, "I don't have electricity in an oven."
Exactly.
"And I would like those things."
Exactly.
And the guide was like, "Oh, this is what we're up against."
Yeah.
But I think there are people who
want order, who want peace, who want food, who want their children will be safe, and will give up dumb things like privacy in return. And
well,
I think that's where
privacy is a fairly modern construct anyway.
That's
when you
think
about it.
That's
I mean, that I'm not saying I don't like privacy, because I do. I really like.
Oh, I love it.
I think you're going to have to look at the global South for what the next iteration of a pro-tech culture is. One of the most exciting stories in the aughts was how Africa had effectively leapt over broadband and gone to mobile commerce and mobile banking back in the early 2000s. Yeah. And what I really admired and liked about this was a culture, it was like, we have these needs. We need a solution that works for us and not a solution that is laid down in a culture that doesn't understand the constraints we have. And I feel we're going to see that again, either through people who are climate change refugees and understand very intimately how fragile our communications networks and our civilizations can be, or through people who have been facing shrinking resources and can ask themselves how they can deploy technology to manage those resources or not even need as much of them as they used to.
You're very optimistic.
I am. People are really creative, though. We've been around for how many thousands of years at this point?
And the one last thing is that the global population is about to peak. Mm-hmm. So that's, probably a good thing. We get to take the pressure off that a little bit. And somebody, somewhere, will take advantage of all this change. It just may not be here. And I think we've gotten really cocky about it.
Mm-hmm. And then there's CRISPR.
Mm-hmm. We're such a young country.
We have all the equilibrium. It's all perfect. Everybody's happy. And then, we got genetic modification.
The U.S. is such a young country. We're so young, especially compared to places like Britain, which go back centuries, and China, which same.
Do you think, though, that America is the hope of the West anymore?
No. But I think also one of the peculiar things that hobbles American culture is our inability to think in terms of the long now or the long future, because we don't have one. Well, we don't have a conception of a long past either. For us, we're like, we started when we landed at Jamestown, which, no, there were lots of people here before that. We just don't consider it part of our national culture.
Had you, however, asked that question 20 years ago, you might say, yeah, because all the innovation, all the invention, we created the internet, mm-hmm. we're changing the world, the future is ours. And then what's happened 20 years later is this grim dystopia that's emerging out of the surveillance capitalism. Mm-hmm.
Exactly what a lot of people predicted would happen. Well, that's what's so fascinating
to me. The Diamond Age came out like 20-odd years ago, and it was basically...
Watching this happen in slow motion. Like, mm-hmm.
Dystopia is already here. It's just not evenly distributed.
Exactly.
Let's take a break on that gloomy note.
Time to drink whiskey.
I really like this group. Sam, I'm sorry we can't give you some of this fine cask strength whiskey.
I live in Washington State. We have our own inebriants.
Good. Sam is always a welcome visitor to our shores from his Erie up there in the Pacific Northwest. Sam Moskovich, tech culture editor at Ars Technica. We're also thrilled to have Lindsay Turrentine here, who is now in charge of all of CBS.
Ooh.
VP at CBS. Is it CBSi, right?
It's CBSi. It's VP of... It's a long title, but basically I'm in charge of tech content at CBSi. Yeah.
In charge of tech content at CBSi.
Mm-hmm.
I. Throw the I in. You know, I was the third employee at CBSi at CNET.
What?
Yes. I'll tell you that story someday. Yeah. Back in the early 90s.
Mm. Before I got there.
Halsey Miner and Shelby Bonney were back east. And they said, we want to start a television network for technology.
Yeah.
And I was doing a radio show. They said, you're the only guy who really knows about national broadcasting. Would you come to work for us?
And you did.
Till Halsey decided he didn't like me. That didn't last that long. But it was an interesting experience. Yeah.
Wow. I started before Halsey left, and then, but not long before he left.
Yeah. So. I made their first pilot. And then I was the guy who told him, guys, I did the due diligence on starting a television network. I said, do you have $500 million to throw away? Because that's how much it's going to cost you before you start making money. And that's when they said, well, maybe we'll think of some other things we can do.
Yeah. They diversified pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's called the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Our show today brought to you by the internet and people who make the internet safe and private for you. ExpressVPN. We've been talking a lot about privacy. There's actually something you can do proactive right now to protect yourself. And I'm not just talking about an open access Wi-Fi hotspot at a coffee shop. I'm talking about your own home. I'm talking about wherever you go. ExpressVPN encrypts your traffic from your device, your computer, to their servers. There's servers all over the world. You emerge into the internet, the country of your choice, with the IP of your choosing, so that no one knows it's you, and your ISP, your carrier, cannot spy on you. They can't see what you're doing, and it's so easy with ExpressVPN. They have apps for every platform, Mac, Windows, iOS, Android. They run seamlessly in the background. You push one button, boom, you're protected. Turn it off when you want. And the thing about ExpressVPN, they have so many servers, they have so much bandwidth, they don't slow you down. And I think a lot of people stop using VPNs because they say, it's inconvenient, it's too slow. It's as convenient and fast as it can be with ExpressVPN. You can now safely surf wherever you are, even public Wi-Fi, without being snooped on, without having your personal data stolen. Read their privacy policy. I always encourage you when you look at VPNs to read and see, do they log? No. Do they keep track of anything you're doing? No. Do they know anything about your business? No. It's rated number one on Tech Radar, 30-day money-back guarantee, and it's less than $7 a month. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet provider, your data resellers, ExpressVPN.com/twit You'll get a 3 extra month bonus when you sign up for a 1-year package. And again, 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. ExpressVPN.com/Twit. ExpressVPN.com/Twit. It's our absolute choice for VPN. You're not going to Barcelona for Mobile World Congress?
I'm not going to Barcelona. I wish that I were, though. I don't usually. I go every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Sort of feel like it's like an every 3 years kind of
thing. It's coming up this next weekend.
It's coming up this next weekend, yeah.
The first taste of new phones at Mobile World Congress will be this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But Samsung's doing it in San Francisco, right, which is weird.
It's like the opposite of at Mobile World Congress. Almost literally.
It's their Galaxy S10, mm-hmm, and we know everything about it, right? Everything's been leaked, as usual with a Samsung event.
Even more than, but I mean, it's like down to every single spec and which phones are coming out, and it's an incredible amount of nuance.
I almost feel like they do this on purpose just because they know we're not going to surprise anyone anyway.
I think that it keeps the excitement going for longer.
Yeah.
Like having a steady stream of leaks gets more and more people interested in wanting to see it. They know that there's something for them, so then they actually tune in to see the real pictures, and I have no idea, honestly, if Samsung is leaking these intentionally, but they're not fighting it. I do know that.
I feel like they have Evleek's phone number. I'm just saying.
I just can't prove anything. Can't prove anything.
Apple will continue to be the super secret nobody knows company, although they haven't been able to.
It gets to the supply chain. So much different than they used to be.
Yeah. Once it gets to the supply chain, all bets are off. They start making it, and nobody's going to keep that a secret. All right. So what do we know? What do we think? Are we excited
about the new galaxies?
Yeah.
About so many galaxies. What, 5 of them?
Right? Four, I think is
4, but maybe 5 is sort of the question, because there's this mysterious monstrous 5G.
What's the folding phone? Is that one of them?
No, that's the TCL. Well, the folding phone for Samsung.
Oh, you're talking about the slap wrist one. No, I'm talking about
We'll talk about that next.
I like the pricing strategy they've got, where they've got the higher end ones and then the entry level.
Oh, that's good. How low are the entry level?
Oh, not low. It's like
$799 or something.
But they wouldn't be doing that if Apple weren't feeling the pinch from overpriced phones, right? Yeah.
And they're also going to have a Plus version, actually named Plus. That's what I always find so bold about Samsung's naming. It's like, take the Apple paradigm and then just do it.
Yeah, we'll just copy it.
It's working. You people are habituated to it.
Sure. Yeah.
We're not going to make you think. Just buy our phone, please.
So there'll be an S10, an S10 Plus. There'll be a cheaper S10, which is the E.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be the, as you say, mysterious, monstrous 5G version.
There is a 4 cameras on the Plus on the back, 2 on the front. I'm not even joking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So many cameras.
So many cameras.
If you had gone back to the year 2000 and said, in the future, your phone will actually eliminate the need for cameras outside of professional
amazing?
Photography,
yeah.
I would have been like, what, how?
Yeah.
And we're busy talking about phones with 4 cameras.
But that, to me, is such an easy move on their part in terms of taking relatively cheap sensors, mm-hmm, dumping them in, and then having every blogger get out there and say, look at the photos. Yeah. It is such a huge selling point for any, like MK, Marques Brownlee, he's going to get up there and he's going to test out all those lenses, and that's gonna move units. So I'm not shocked at all that they're going to have like 20, it's going to be like a spider's eyeball by the time we get to 2022.
Let's face it, cameras are probably the number one feature on phones these, mm-hmm, days, not the phone.
And it's the differentiator when every phone looks exactly the same.
Compete with Google, though? Doesn't Google have the magic Google foo here?
Google's interest in the Pixel has, we were going to talk about this elsewhere, but it's gone up 50% in the last year, at least a little bit more than, mm-hmm, that.
But it's still a minor blip.
Still a minor blip, but people talk about it, mm-hmm, and Google has done a fantastic job getting people who love cameras interested in their phone. And I have to say, the thing about the Google Pixel is that the integration of Hey Google, it's so good. And so compare that to what Samsung is going to offer. And Samsung can offer the most beautiful hardware in the world.
Shame.
They're still working at it.
And there's going to be a Bixby button, it looks like, on these Evleek photos. There is
of
a Bixby
Of course
button.
There's going to be a Bixby button. Come on. There's probably going to be 4 Bixby buttons at this point.
I do not understand this. I do not understand why they're still working
and not licensing
Google's technology.
No,
I don't
get it. Because Google's assistant is, so one of the things we do for fun around the house, because this is how we roll, is we ask Siri and Google Assistant the same question. And see how
I do
they,
this all the time.
And see how they answer.
Yeah.
And Google Assistant, just 9 times out of 10, much, much better.
So you do have some of these assistants in your home.
My husband covers mobile technology for Tom's Guide.
Oh,
so
that's your excuse.
So we have all, so he, we have an entire room full of the stuff that gets shipped for testing.
Well, the market has spoken in terms of this proprietary button. People are still clearly buying S8s and S9s with this ridiculous Bixby button, not being able to remap it to a better service or even to just, I don't know, a camera button or some sort of shortcut. So they're not going to, as long as Bixby can penetrate one market and give Samsung that kind of data and that kind of access, it's going to be there, plain and simple.
Samsung has the data. They probably know that nobody pushes that button.
We have someone in the chat room named Bleak who's pointing out that Samsung is doing very well with Bixby in the Korean market. So I appreciate that, because this does point out that we're looking at this from a really American point of view, and AI is going to be something where it's going to be tied into different geographical markets too.
There's also, historically, Samsung has been at great pains to differentiate from Android and Google. They don't even want to mention the A word. Mm-hmm. They looked for a long time at putting a different operating system in their stuff, Tizen, but they couldn't make it work. Mm-hmm. I really feel like Samsung, as much as they could, wants to be the not Google.
Well, here's the other thing that Samsung is doing that we don't think about in American households. Mm-hmm. Samsung has absolutely penetrated the home appliance market.
Yeah,
good point. All of my appliances are Samsung
too.
Now.
Yeah,
and
they make that stupid sing-song chime though all the time.
I love it.
They're singing all the time.
I love it. I actually love it when my washer sings to me. I haven't turned it off. I like it a lot.
It's time to go.
I get super happy.
So my laundry's done. How is the service on those? And
it has gotten much better. It was terrible at first, and now I had a problem with my refrigerator, and they were extra helpful because I think it was so bad in the past.
Mm. Yeah.
In any case, most of those devices come with at least the ability to be attached to your network, or they will soon. And I think that that's what Bixby has to do with.
Yeah.
Once Samsung has got all the hardware in your home outside of your phone, potentially, even if you don't own a Samsung phone, that there's going to be some tie in there. And Samsung really does want to hook and create interoperability between your television and your devices and eventually your phone.
I would love to see how Samsung and Amazon are going to deal with each other then, because Amazon is doing its best to wire your home and get you from point of sale to point of use in your household. Mm-hmm. Samsung is coming at it from exactly the opposite direction.
Where does that come together?
Do you think that's why they keep Bixby alive? Because at some point they hope that they can introduce Bixby into your
absolutely.
Home.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying.
The last few years
is there to help your appliances talk to each other.
Right.
The last few years at CES, the whole appeal to smart appliances and smart home has been the idea that the cloud of information associated with you, your favorite recipes, your groceries, your family schedule, how often you eat, what times of day you eat, all of that is eventually going to get loaded into your appliances, and then your appliances can order groceries for you, so you don't have to do it, or they can send you reminders so that if they detect that you're driving by a store, they can be like, ping, you need to buy milk, and you can hit that on the way home. Like, that is the vision of the smart future that they have.
I just, as long as they keep putting in the headphone jack, I don't really care about
I can't take a refrigerator without a headphone jack.
That's
either.
That's absolutely right. You gotta, they don't have the courage to take that out. They will also, by the way, replace the notch with the new dot. Ugh. This is going to be the wave of the future, a circular cutout for the camera.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. It looks better.
I think it's less obtrusive than a dot. I mean, a notch.
Yeah.
A dot's better than a notch. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. Apple's the trendsetter there. Mm.
I would just mostly want to have a little Android background image that makes it look like Johnny Five from Short Circuit whenever you're frozen up on that. That's my dream there.
Oh.
The shape is perfect.
That. I think you could do that.
That would be delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Just a little Johnny Five dot up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does the Elda Barge song play as your ringtone then, too? It's Johnny, he says.
Oh my God. I don't know. You guys are a different generation.
A cool one. We agree. Yes.
You want to talk about Arthur Godfrey? I'm here, but I don't know what this Johnny Five stuff is. Samsung will do a foldable phone, although I noticed there's not a lot of leaks about the foldable phone. Would they offer it? Do you think it's going to be for sale?
Gosh, they really want to make it for sale. I think that that this is going to be important for some trend setting and just getting attention back onto phones.
It's a differentiator as well.
It's a differentiator.
It's going to look great on the gram.
It's going to look great on the gram.
You'll have people like doing, you know, they have an umbrella and they're smiling into the rain and their wrists will be prominently displayed.
Oh, you're talking about the TCL one now?
Yeah.
This is different from the foldable phone.
I jumped ahead to the wrist.
Samsung's been talking about the foldable phone for a while. I suspect, if I were just going to, I'm not out there personally reporting on it, but if I were going to guess, Samsung will talk about it at their event, but not release it at the same time as the Galaxy phones. I don't think there's going to be a foldable Galaxy. Okay. Could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I think TCL is trying to get in on this conversation because people like us are sitting around being like, oh yeah, and then there's that wrist one. And if Samsung's already talking about a foldable phone, TCL is going to come, people are going to be really fascinated by the idea of this.
This looks terrible. This looks like a slave bracelet. This doesn't, this is not... I'm a slave to my technology. Look how big that is.
Is it really that much of a leap from the Apple Watch?
No.
I think so. You know, I think question once it's out because
it's
people,
hard.
People have accepted those weird models.
Yeah. We were talking about this right before the show that the potential of a phone that you bend around your wrist is actually potentially fantastic for people like me who often don't have pockets.
Right.
Yeah.
You're already shackled to technology. Why not just... Go all the way.
I mean, yeah, no, I remember just call that, a spade a spade.
I can't remember when there was that.
They should call it the shackle.
Can you
the
imagine
TCL
if
shackle?
They don't change women's clothing to give us pockets, but they're willing to launch an entire new tech category?
But you know what? Actually, pockets have... Have you noticed that recently dresses have pockets?
Pockets, yeah.
It's true.
They're not pants? Yeah.
Well, no, pants also have pockets.
Pants have pockets.
Sometimes
dresses have pockets.
Like vestigial pockets.
Yeah. And now they do. And also yoga pants have pockets.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yes.
What's the point of
They're
wearing yoga pants if you have something
thighs,
in your pockets?
And it is life-changing.
Yeah. Oh. Well, sometimes the pants pockets are just vestigial or they're for show. And you're like, oh, it's
nothing actually
it's like
fits
the back flippers on a whale. Nothing happens. But
Mandy the Clown in our chat room makes her own pockets. But she's got like phones in there and bananas and all sorts. You know,
the scarf that comes with a pocket knitted in, that's the stuff.
Oh,
the hide a pocket in the scarf.
Hide a pocket.
I'm just waiting for somebody in the chat room to be like, remember cargo pants, you guys? They still make them.
I still wear them.
Utilikilt or bust. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I'm wearing under here.
Are you wearing a Utilikilt?
Oh, God, no, never.
Oh, okay.
No, I do want to say, though, that we've got Samsung, LG, and TCL. They're all interested in ultra-thin screen technology. So for Samsung to come out and say we have a foldable phone, just to hold it up and say it exists, is a giant attack against LG, which has just been rolling over them with in terms of
almost
of OLED
literally rolling over them with rollable screens.
So I think that makes sense for them to say, hey, here's phones you can definitely buy, and here's the one you're going to want to buy when we can make it more affordable. So your move, LG, that sort of thing. I think it's a power move because that OLED.
Well, and LG is behind in the phone world, so Samsung definitely has a chance to make that move.
Absolutely.
We will be covering the Samsung event live. I presume you're going to go. It's in San Francisco.
We will be covering it live also.
Of course. We'll have dueling streams. Ours begins 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. What we're going to do, it's on Wednesdays. We're going to start Windows Weekly early at 9 a.m. And then right after Windows Weekly, we'll go into the live coverage of the Samsung Unpacked event where you will learn absolutely nothing new. But it's always fun to watch a Samsung event to see what crazy things they are up
and you to. You might find out more about something like the folding phone, which we don't know more about yet. We know a little bit, so you might get something kind of interesting.
Do you think price that's holding it back or technology? It looked very thick.
I think it's technology. I think the one that we saw that was an off-brand at CES that we actually played with was...
The Royal?
Yeah, it was... not something you would actually want yet.
Yeah.
Like, fascinating to see, but not quite ready.
And so I think for something like that, price may not be important.
No. Well, also just the sheer sustainability of that on a wrist. How much of a beating can it currently take? What kind of plastic and polymer
mitts
are we looking at?
Now we're talking about the snap bracelet again. The snap.
We're back. We can't stop talking about it.
I'm just saying any of that stuff. Any foldable phone, anything like that is going to have that sort of wear and tear issue that needs a couple generations.
Well, it's a tickle shackle.
Well, one of the core problems with technology, though, is how do you make it so it holds up to a life where, you know, you are either washing dishes or you're doing sports.
That thing is not going to hold up to anything.
Or you're camping or you're roughhousing with
small
people.
Well, think about how long that LG rollable television took to actually make it to market. So we saw those foldable screens, 3 years ago? And then 2 years ago, we saw a prototype of the rollable screen, but it wasn't for sale. This year it's going for sale. So if we think of this as the first year we've even seen prototypes of bendable phones, 2 years,
three, I'd say.
Take a little while.
And then next year we're all buying one, all of us. Let's do it. Make a pact.
I mean, it's kind of,
one of those snap bracelets where you have it like this and then you're done with the call and you go whack and it's a bracelet and you walk off. That I would buy.
That would be like an excellent way to hang up on somebody in a huff, too.
Oh, my God. That'd be great in movies. Just, I'm done, Betty. It's over. Whack.
yes, yes, you get me.
I'm telling you, there's a future in that. I don't know if you could do it more than once. You'd probably break it immediately, but it'd be satisfying. Yeah. That's the key. Our show today brought to you by Wasabi. Wasabi's Hot Cloud Storage. And I think this is a really interesting company. You know that I am a fan of Carbonite, have been for years. David Friend, a good friend of mine, started it with his buddy Jeff Flowers. In order to make Carbonite work, they actually patented and invented a revolutionary process of laying data on disks sequentially. Now, your computer does it in blocks, but doing it sequentially had some real benefits to data density, but also speed and reliability. That's the technology that makes Wasabi efficient and affordable and really cool. I know it's a new name to you. Nobody lost their job by buying, you know, Amazon or Google or Microsoft. But I've got to tell you, add a fourth name to that list when you go shopping for hot cloud storage, because Wasabi has some real advantages. We're all moving more and more data to the cloud. This is businesses, of course. In fact, by 2025, analysts say there'll be 163 zettabytes in the cloud. I don't even know what that's 21 zeros. Crazy. Well, Wasabi has a system that will let you store your data in the cloud 80% less and 6 times faster than S3. It supports the S3 API, so you already know how to use it, but it's 80% cheaper, 6 times faster. It's HIPAA compliant, FINRA compliant, CJIS compliant. Really, nowadays, cloud storage is probably more secure than on-premises storage. It's really safe up there. And to make it even safer, they have a new form of immutable storage. You can designate some data as immutable. It can't be changed. Protects it from cryptoware, you know, ransomware, from fumble-fingered employees. You could say, this data, that's safe. That data is really safe. And man, it is great. There's one tier of service, free unlimited egress. That makes a big deal when it comes to planning and budgeting, because you know it's not going to cost you to egress your data. They'll even send you, if you have a lot of data, a Wasabi ball. You can migrate petabytes of data, copy it to the ball, send it to Wasabi. It's up in the cloud. I think Wasabi is really impressive, and I want you to take a look at it. I know it's a new name. You need to know more about it. But when you go to the boss and you say it's 80% cheaper and it's 600% faster, they're going to listen. You can experience Wasabi for yourself. Wasabi. Free unlimited storage for a month. You go to wasabi.com, you click the free trial link and enter the code TWIT. You're going to get unlimited data for a month, a fifth the price. Wow. 6 times faster. Wasabi.com. The offer code is TWIT. You'd be crazy not to at least check it out. That's all I can say. Wasabi.com. Offer code TWIT. Anything else at Mobile World Congress? There's a new ThinQ phone. Am I saying that right?
I think so.
Or ThinQ. I don't know how you say it. That's the LG.
ThinQ.
The LG. You know, we were just talking about LG, and they've kind of accepted this backseat phone.
Don't get too far in the backseat. Remember HTC? They got so far in the backseat they were left behind.
I know. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of sneak around and suggest something that will make that phone more.
I keep trying these phones. I don't get excited.
In the phone space anymore.
It's tough. Is it really just a two-company world now, Samsung and... an
Google.
iPhone.
Yeah.
And Google, I guess. I don't know. I think Google phone sales don't really...
They've been improving.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more of a...
All year, they sold fewer phones last year than Apple sold in a month.
Yeah. Oh, for sure, but there's just really one.
Fastest growing U.S. smartphone brand, 43% year-over-year growth.
Yeah, but if you're starting from a really small number, 43%.
That doesn't
tell you
anything.
It's really small, but people still get excited about this one, and they don't get excited about other phones, and that's the difference.
I love my Pixel
3. Also, you look at how well the potential for them to integrate with their smart home technology, having your phone connect with that. I don't think you can overstate that. That's
and I think it's important for Google to stick it out while waiting for whatever the next technology is. Because at some point in the future, we are not all going to sit around with this and look at it. We'll be using something else. So it's really just a matter of making sure that phone manufacturers understand how people use their screens and what they're using them for while they're on the go until HoloLens or whatever takes over.
It's not... I was going to say, it's not the hardware, it's the services. Every big company has its own version of service. I know there's a dashboard of some of the stories, and they all seem to connect to proprietary services that would be way better on that manufacturer's device. And, you know, Google with its camera, the big part of that is the machine learning, that you need their app. Right. And, like, in a pinch, if you sideload that Google camera app onto another phone and make it work, they're still cobbling together your data and pushing that forward. So that's still a win. So that's when I look at all of these different manufacturers pushing ahead with Mobile World Congress, I think they all agree, let's just get them in our devices and users' hands and make them stick around for more than a year so that we can just hook them into those services.
What I think is interesting about Mobile World Congress this year is that they are no longer Mobile World Congress. It's MWC, kind of like when KFC went to just being KFC.
Or CES went to CES.
Went to being CES. Yeah. It's now MWC.
Oh, that positions them for whatever's post-mobile.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that this year we're talking about new shapes to phones, and there'll be a lot of crazy little shapes, but it's like a bridge year.
So you have to be in this business if you want to participate in whatever's coming next. You have to have a foot in the business. Is that the idea?
I think you have to understand, like we were saying, you have to understand what is done with the device.
Isn't it, though? I mean, we were just talking about how afraid we are of Google spying on us. Isn't this the perfect spy device?
In many ways, yeah.
But it doesn't seem to faze people? Is it just us that are talking about it?
No, I think everybody talks about it.
And
but
nobody
I think they
does
also
anything
accept
about it?
It.
Yeah. I feel like people trust Google. Am I wrong, Sam?
How many people obsessively watch the tech news to see what Google's been up to in terms of
Google?
In terms of the deals they've been making or the way they treat their employees or...
Yeah, but they seem, unlike Facebook, I mean, if you compare Google to Facebook, Google seems to skate a little bit more than Facebook does. Really? Or not? Maybe that's just me.
Yeah,
Google
you're
actually
in
does
terms
a better
of,
job with the press.
Okay.
Yeah, they do a better job with the press. Yeah. They're in the West. They've sort of, the fact that Google is a verb, I think, gives them that sort of leeway. You know, nobody, you know, people use Facebook as a verb generally in a negative way as of late, I find. So I think that they have been skating by, even though there have been antitrust stories, there have been moments of negative press. But yeah, I would say absolutely in the public eye, they and Apple are sort of neck and neck in that general, well, I like what they've got. I love their maps in Google's case.
They're the cool tech. They're the cool tech because they've managed to spin a perception that they're responsive, that they're designed for. People want to be associated with the halo effects, I think.
Yeah, I think it's true. The other thing that all of these phone manufacturers have to do is anticipate what's going to happen after 5G, which is why having a phone in the game is so important right now, because they have to understand how consumers are going to perceive 5G, are going to interact with 5G, even though we know that 5G is so much more than what's going to happen with your phone.
But the notion of part of that super high-speed internet everywhere you go, is that what makes 5G interesting?
Well, I think what makes 5G interesting is super high speed and the low latency. It's really the low latency. So the idea is
how does that change things?
Well,
video
everywhere and instantaneously, but not just video consumption, video collaboration. Yeah. So I was talking with somebody on a panel from Samsung actually at CES, and he was saying, I'm in a band and the rest of my band is in Korea and I can play drums with them simultaneously.
Notoriously difficult to do over the internet because you're hearing them a second later or a half second later.
Exactly. Yeah. So in theory,
it's a workplace
5G,
changer.
It changes a lot of how we communicate with each other in ways that I think are going to be very hard to appreciate until we actually are there.
It's not speed, it's latency that's the real.
Yeah. It's
and
a
for gaming, that's a huge deal. If you want to play Fortnite with a bunch of other people, you can't have a latency.
The AR
network.
Economy is going to be based on that too.
Augmented reality, why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, I did a HoloLens demo a while back where I put on the headset and I was supposed to repair a pipe. And Microsoft actually walked me into a room with a bunch of broken pipes. I was supposed to look at the schematic on the left side of my HoloLens goggles, and on the right hand side, they had a customer service rep who was going to walk me through. And then I looked straight ahead at the pipes, and the idea was this way: the customer service rep could see what I was seeing. I could refer to the schematic. I could fix it. I could talk to somebody. Interesting experience, but what I noticed was conversations had a lag when I was talking to a person through the headset, and when I did verbal queries to call up other parts of the manual and schematic, it took a minute or two. But if you have AR and you want to do things like repair an oil rig, or you're on a space station, or you are in a firefighting type situation where you have to repair equipment in a high pressure, time sensitive environment, you want to make sure that you don't have a lag, that there's no skip out, no communication, things like that.
And, And to that point, I would add that it's just the consumer level thing is you want that instantaneous access just in that first moment. It was like, remember the first time you ever searched for something using Google and it just worked. It was just like that. That is what other companies want for devices that you strap to your head that have any sort of friction. The less friction there is there in terms of saying, this is going to make you a member of the connected world and offer cool augmented perks, boom. So I think it's less about someone out in a space station and more about somebody in their kitchen.
It's actually about teleconferencing. There's a growing class of devices too, and Google just announced one that they're integrating into Google Hangouts. And the idea is that this way you can call in with all your colleagues remotely. And when you don't have the lag and you don't have somebody doing that weird jerky thing on the screen when they're talking to you and all of that, well, it's going to really help conversations flow.
This is what Facebook is holding on for, right? This is the Facebook Oculus investment, you know, and this was probably anticipated many years ago. Yeah. This is my theory. Let's just quietly develop Oculus in a way that integrates with Facebook until the latency is gone, and then people really can
feel
like...
And then the metaverse
like,
is real.
And then you really are hanging out with your family in Kansas and San Francisco and New York simultaneously because you're there with them. I mean, I think that that is the positive interpretation of this. We'll see if they can actually kind of survive until that benefit becomes... Right. There are probably plenty of other benefits, but...
So I ask everybody this question. I know nobody really knows the answer, but I'm going to give you guys a chance. When? Is it going to happen? And then when?
What, for augmented reality?
5G.
2020. Oh. It will be broadly accepted.
I'm sorry. I should have been clear.
5G phones are coming out. There will be many of them announced at Mobile World Congress. Many 5G phones. Now,
phones from Google or Apple.
Not yet, but there
or
will
Samsung,
be phones
maybe
announced.
Maybe Samsung. Yeah.
Oh, Samsung is announcing 5G phones, most likely. There's OnePlus
Google and
phone.
Apple aren't.
No. And so 2019 is going to be the year where a few people have it, a few networks come online. 2020 is when most of the networks are going to come online, and then a lot of people.
And by 2022, you should be able to have a conference call without wanting to kill
yourself.
Aren't
there severe NIMBY issues, though, because you have to have so many cell towers for this technology?
But they're not towers. They're very small antenna. I mean, yes, there will be NIMBY issues, and people will be really worried about them.
Not in my backyard. You ain't putting that thing in my backyard.
What is the radiation doing? Am I getting the cancer?
Yeah.
Right. And it's basically like a microwave oven on every rooftop.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds fine.
I actually know the number of people I know who refuse to be in the same room as a microwave because they're worried about it is not zero.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not zero for sure. Or don't stand in front of it while you're making your popcorn. But I feel like that has kind of died off. And I'm not saying I am not taking a position on whether it's healthy or not, but I think that it will happen, and they're very small installs. So it's not like putting one of those giant trees on the side of the road.
But they have to be within a few hundred feet of each other.
There have to be a lot of them.
They have to be an awful lot of them. Yeah. That's also a massive capital expenditure.
The thing I'm a little concerned about is we've already got big broadband lags in America. You know, in terms of how easy and how cheap is your access to high-speed internet in several belts of the country compared to rural areas. Are we going to be broadening that?
Or
are we going to drive across fields of alfalfa and sorghum and just every...
Well, that's the same thing. I don't understand. Where are those microwave ovens going to go?
Yeah.
It's
not even that. It's the expense of putting them in if there's only five people that are going to use them. It's the same reason you don't have broadband in rural areas now.
Yeah.
That doesn't change the equation.
And, you know, CNET did a fantastic package on rural broadband coverage. It was really quite good. And this has been a thing that has been a low-level ongoing issue actually since, like, the start of the internet, but it's picked up increasing urgency, especially as more agriculture becomes dependent on broadband and internet access.
Yeah.
So the question is,
you got to have internet in that John Deere.
Right. Who's going to underwrite the expense? And is it going to be pockets of haves and have-nots? Or are we going to get
It already is pockets of haves and have-nots.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's terrible. I mean, I grew up in a small town, and I still spend a lot of time in that small town.
Yeah.
And it's difficult.
It's terrible. I hear from people every day.
It's not great.
It's not good.
Even on the Sonoma Coast.
Yeah.
AT&T basically doesn't work.
Yeah.
Which it's 20 miles from San Francisco.
And in a way, I feel like this 5G thing is going to distract from the FCC's broadband plan, which as far as I can tell is moribund.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's just going to defer and say, oh, no, don't worry about it. 5G's coming.
That doesn't fix everything.
But it doesn't fix
it. It's an infrastructure issue.
Well, also... Oh, I was just going to point out that we have a little ways to go in terms of phone design. What Qualcomm has come out and said is the number of extra antennas that are going to be needed, the kind of design language that is going to be needed to combine a Snapdragon 855 and an X50 modem and the antenna modules and the antenna chips. You know, forget your headphone jack. That's gone. forget your tiny battery.
We're going to need 5G hats.
It's going to be.
We'll all be simultaneously receivers and senders. It'll be great.
The earliest generations of 5G are going to absolutely compromise in one way or in another, and we have to wait to see how designers really do that, or if they're like, that's just going to be a phone we make as a limited design, and it could become chicken or egg. If these phones are too bulky or are too unwieldy or don't have wireless charging or have the kind of can't put your finger on this part of the phone gate, you know, there's a lot that could happen there that just sets off an early adoption failure if everyone tries to rush it and the phones stink.
I still think it'll be 2020 when there's a pretty large amount of adoption on phones. That doesn't mean all the infrastructure will be built out, and it'll be a couple more years until it's all fleshed out enough to be able to have that completely virtual experience. But I don't know. From what I'm hearing from a variety of phone manufacturers, they are working really hard on this. Partially,
I'm not worried about the manufacturers. I'm worried about the carriers.
And the carriers, because the carriers see this as the future. It is.
Or are they going to do what AT&T did and just label 4G, 5G, and move on?
I think that they're going to do it. It's going to take time, but ultimately it might be less for them to maintain because those individual receivers are smaller and a little bit, I think, more nimble.
And there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, right?
Well, it's almost like electric cars that way, where you have the cars, but the charging stations, watching those move out of smaller areas, that's still a process that's ongoing.
Well, I'll tell you who will know when the internet doesn't work or does work. They know now. Thousand Eyes. Do you know about Thousand Eyes? This is really an interesting company. They did an event in San Francisco. I hosted a panel for them about a month ago. And because Thousand Eyes, they really should call it Million Eyes. They've got sensors all over the internet, everywhere, in every endpoint, in the middle, at the edge. And because they've got these sensors everywhere, they know what's going on. They did a great study on cloud providers. And it's really interesting to see, for instance, that some cloud providers, I won't name names, are hopping around, you know, to get to China, they're hopping through Turkey. And you don't know this as a user. You might notice, well, there's more latency when I do it this way. But in fact, Thousand Eyes knows exactly what's going on. And if you're in the cloud for your business, and you know what, if you're not now, you will be in the cloud for your business. It's such a benefit. You gain agility, but there's also risk and you're losing control. And that's where Thousand Eyes is amazing. Because when your cloud app or your service isn't working 100%, you can find out what's wrong and fix it. Instant visibility down the entire service delivery path from the cloud to your end user, including all that you don't, it doesn't have to be on things you control. Thousand Eyes sensors are everywhere. It's unlike anything you've seen before. Essentially, if you're in IT, if you're in ops, you understand that that's why they draw the cloud like a little puffy cloud, but you don't know what's inside it. There's just this mysterious portion of the cloud that your stuff's going through. And I think most people just kind of go, we'll never know. Why is it latent? I don't know. We'll never know. It's the cloud. Now you will know. It's like you've been blind. It's like you've been looking through a dirty windshield. And Thousand Eyes comes along and squeegees it clean, and suddenly you go, wow, I can see it all. I can see it all, and you can fix whatever's going wrong. Thousand Eyes is cloud-based software. It's built to help organizations do the cloud right. No one has the eyes that Thousand Eyes has. A massive array of vantage points spanning the global internet, cloud providers, even the Wi-Fi in your local coffee shop, in private and public clouds. This is not your old school IT monitoring, which just kind of sits there in your silo and can only see what's going on inside the data center. That's not going to help you in the cloud. Thousand Eyes' unique path visualization technology extends beyond any boundaries, allowing you to see, understand, and improve the experience for all your apps, services, and websites. I don't know how to explain this to you better than just say go to thousandeyes.com/twit. That's all spelled out, thousandeyes.com/twit. Top banks, enterprises, SaaS companies, the world's largest and fastest growing brands rely on Thousand Eyes software to do the cloud and to do it right. You will be so grateful. I promise you, I will be getting emails from people saying, I can't believe I worked without this for so long. ThousandEyes.com/twit to see what you've been missing. They also have a great ebook that you can give your boss. 5 Cloud Migration Challenges You Shouldn't Ignore. If the cloud is important to you, either today or in the future, before you do anything, visit thousandeyes.com/twit. Don't let the internet get between you and your customers. Find out what's going on. It's a squeegee. It's a squeegee so you could see what's going on. thousandeyes.com/twit. Let's see. What else is going on in the world? Apple has, according to John Pachkowski, he's the last man standing at BuzzFeed. I feel bad for John.
He's so talented.
He's so good. He'll find, even if they don't keep him. But I you know what? BuzzFeed has been doing some really
good.
Good
morning, Silicon Valley.
Yeah. BuzzFeed's been doing great work.
I know.
Great work. And I had a hilarious conversation with my 15-year-old who was like, wait, what?
Because they think it's a viral networking company.
Even kids do. Which
that's
is
where
a
they
problem
made a mistake.
My daughter thinks it's a quiz engine.
It is. I mean, it is a quiz engine.
But it
and I was shocked. I mean, he was shocked when his mom was like, "No, actually, BuzzFeed has serious news."
Yeah, but it is a universal really problem for BuzzFeed. My wife, we were talking about the BuzzFeed story, which I think ended up being proven. I don't know. It wasn't maybe the best source story. I don't know. What was it? It was a political story.
I know which one you're referring
to. It was a Trump story, but I can't remember what it was.
Is it the Mueller investigation?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's right. Yeah. And then Mueller denied it, and it made BuzzFeed look kind of bad, a little egg on their face. But we still don't know. It might...
We don't actually know that it was wrong.
We don't know that it was wrong. But anyway...
They had a really strong political...
Lisa said, well, it's BuzzFeed. Of course they don't have that scoop. And I said, no, they have a... That's the problem, right? It's a brand problem.
They are one of the few outlets that actually looks at finance and economic stories through a lens of people under the age of 40.
Right.
With great reporters like
Pachkowski.
Yeah, which is vital, too, if you want to understand where things are going to be 5 to 10 years from now in terms of employment and which industries are going to be thriving. And
so Mueller has yet to put out a press release denying this, but apparently, according to Pachkowski, Apple is planning an event for March 25th. Mm-hmm. Actually, this ties back a little bit to our conversation, because this is going to be apparently a news event. Mm-hmm. This is, remember,
About Apple News.
About Apple News. Yeah. They bought Texture, which is a magazine subscription service. We loved it. It was a sponsor here. They have their own Apple News. They've been hiring people like crazy, including some of our employees, to run a news division. But they've been in, Nathan Olivares-Giles disappeared to go to Apple, we didn't hear anything more from him. They've hired a lot of great people. Serenity Caldwell, they hired a lot of great people. Mm-hmm. Anand, right? So
they've been very quiet.
Chris Breen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've been building up an organization, but so we think this is what we're going to hear about in March. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just a rumor. Apple hasn't announced anything. They won't get invites until the first or second week in March.
Yep.
Apple is probably going to talk about iPad. I would think going to talk about iPads and other stuff, but maybe not. Maybe this just
that's the word on the street is not.
There are rumors about new iPad Mini. It would in a way make sense because
you could read it on your Mini.
Yes, reading on your Mini. And by the way, an aside, the rumors say that the Mini will still have a headphone jack.
Weird.
So why the Pro didn't and the Mini would is kind of beyond me. But
courage.
That's an aside.
Kids.
Courage.
Could be just could be the motherboard. Could be just the supplier for the smaller.
Maybe the Mini
factor.
Isn't a big upgrade. Who knows?
We that makes a lot of sense about the motherboard.
Yeah.
Back to the point. Yeah. It could be involved, but I think it's probably just going to be about the
news
the
and streaming.
Yes.
Because that's the other service Apple's supposedly shopping around. Remember, they've been acquiring like crazy.
They have
more than $1 billion worth of new content.
They have been making an increasing percentage of the revenue off of services and recurring income.
But that's mostly the App Store. It's not really.
Apple Music.
Yeah.
Maybe Apple Music and the App Store.
And Apple TV in general.
Yeah.
So people buy movies off of Apple.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I mean,
if Apple were to put together a bundled subscription where they're like, you get 2 to 4 movies a month plus access to these publications plus access to Apple Music.
Oh, you think it might be all one service?
It could be.
You know, one of the real concerns that people who are launching or maintaining a streaming service are going to have is what is the saturation point for consumers? Like, how many streaming services do people want to subscribe to? And if you are Apple, what you can do is put together a media bundle and then present it as, we're not asking you to subscribe to a whole lot of things. We're giving you a one-stop shop, the same way that Amazon positions its Prime stuff as a one-stop
shop. Although I think that would be really smart.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what they're going to do.
Oh,
according to the Wall Street Journal, and this is probably because publishers, including the Wall Street Journal, leaked this.
Yeah.
Apple has gone to them saying, okay, here's what we're going to do. It's going to be $10 a month. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep half the money. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to divide the other half amongst you based on how much time people spend looking at your stuff.
Oh, my God.
And, oh, by the way, don't expect to get any of that subscriber information. And news publishers, that's, A, that subscriber information is hugely valuable. They can market to them. The New York Times, I get lots of junk from the New York Times and the Washington Post. B, Apple keeps 50% and gives us a kind of an unknown share of the rest.
The thing that is so weird to me about this is that, okay, let's say that you are a New York Times and or Wall Street Journal and or Washington Post subscriber. Maybe this will make sense for you if you get other stuff bundled in there and you really like the app. But most people do not pay for their news.
No.
So the idea that all of this is going to get bundled in something that is convenient, I don't think is enough. I think that Apple is going to, it's going to be harder than Apple thinks.
Well, it's worse than that for these, for the, let's say the Washington Post. Or the New York Times. So you're not going to get a lot of new people.
Yeah.
And people like me who pay full freight for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal, I'm going to say, oh, crap, I could just spend $10 a month to get it all. That saves me money.
If
and
you're
so you're going to lose them.
If you're a Prime member, you pay practically nothing for a Washington Post subscription already.
Yep. Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's a case of successful media bundling.
But Amazon does not want me to dump that to go to Apple's.
No. But to get back to my insane theory about the merits of multimedia bundling, you pay for Amazon Prime not only to get the free shipping, yay, we're killing the planet, you also get access to huge video library, plus a super cheap rate on the Washington Post. Apple could, in theory, put something together like that. Where I keep getting hung up on is the whole, oh, we'll pay you according to user engagement, because that is so disconnected from the quality of the editorial product you put out.
That's right.
As
sure.
to be
what it just it drives just, is link bait. It just drives link bait, right?
Yeah.
Well, and the difference is that Amazon effectively owns. I mean, Amazon doesn't own the Washington Post, but
Bezos owns it.
Effectively, it's very closely tied. Mm-hmm. Apple is much more of a third party for most of the people Apple's probably trying to work with.
Yeah.
Let's say that this is happening. With the full disclosure, my employer is part of the Condé Nast family. Condé Nast has been linked. They were part of Texture before. Mm-hmm. And I will just say that subscriptions are sort of the next level for a lot of print media companies in terms of putting paywalls on sites. That's becoming more of a thing. And I could see Apple going to these companies and saying, we have an idea for how to get you money for people who wouldn't otherwise pay, and thinking that they're smart, when these other companies are trying to say, no, we're trying to sell our version of this. So I think what's going to happen is a lot. I have no context on any of that stuff. I'm removed from all of that. But I do believe that is a battle that is going to play out for however long it takes for Apple to actually shout this out, if it hasn't already been going on for months, and why all the hiring happened before a product was released. I also want to point out, I was a former contributor to The Daily, which we may all recall.
Oh, this was Murdoch's
That iPad-only magazine
that
Apple and News Corp worked on together, where you paid $1 a week, you had to read ads, you could only access that day's content, a total disaster. So Apple was closely linked to the beginning of that. There was no way that Apple News as an app, as a service, as a paid product will be in any way resembling that. I think you can look at that disaster, that burning
dumpster. You had a nice newsroom though, didn't you?
I was freelance. I was here in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
So you had a really nice newsroom.
I visited there once. It was lovely. They were throwing money away, but I do believe, look at what that was. Look at every single mistake it made and expect the exact opposite in terms of access, design.
Here's
tone.
Apple's pitch. The world is changing. Mm-hmm. You need digital subscriptions. We know everything there is to know about it. We're going to bring you a vast audience. We know it's a lucrative audience because they buy our crappy phone for twice as much as it's worth. No, they won't say that, but that's,
they've spent more this year on apps than they did the year before.
That's right.
They're engaged.
They're a very engaged audience. We can solve your problem. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think Apple ended up getting 50%, but what if it's 30%?
Well, you know? I don't know. And here's the other thing that remains to be seen is whether or not people who are used to getting Apple News for free
will pay.
Apple News is worth every penny you pay for it right now.
Ooh.
Which is the cost of the phone?
It's dreck. I mean, it isn't good. Is it? Do you use it?
No.
No.
I know, but I know I know a lot of people who do.
Yeah. Let's just see what's on the top.
Because it's on their phone, right? You cannot overestimate.
I've already moved it. It's sitting with the Stocks app in the Apple folder.
I hate using the My Mom metric for tech reporting the same way I hate using the, oh, my wife pointed this out. Like, the implication that your female relatives can't use tech is just exploding. But my mother, who is a eager and enthusiastic adopter of technology at 70, got her first iPhone last year and is like hooked on Apple News. She's always sending me articles that she found through Apple News.
My mother too, and actually I like what you said, because my mother is the only user of technology in my parents' household. Mm-hmm. My father doesn't have an email address. My mother is the adopter, and she's an eager adopter, and she likes Apple News.
I would think Apple would know a lot about me. Mm-hmm. I've been using Apple News. I use other Apple products. In my top stories, for me, I've got a golf story about, I don't play golf, I don't follow golf. J.B. Holmes' slow play criticized by announcers. Mm-hmm. I have a popular mechanics story on the Army's next infantry guns. I do have a couple of, there's a politics story and a couple of tech stories, including why America's new apartment buildings all look alike. My fear when I click this, and I bet you this other people have this problem, is that if I fall for any one of these, I'm going to get a lot more of the same. Meanwhile, Google, which does also its own news, let's see what its top stories are for me. I think it might be a little bit better. I don't know.
I'm looking at my Apple. Now I'm doing the same thing.
Politics.
It's not.
Politics.
I don't have the app on my phone.
Man discovers 30-year-old Apple computer still in working order. Okay, you can cross that. It is Sunday.
Yeah.
VR games sees huge increase in sales as players confuse it for Apex Legends. Okay, that's a good story. I might click on that. Are you playing Apex Legends yet, Sam?
Oh, yeah. I can tell you all about that if we get into Sam's gaming corner at any
point. Well, it's a story because it did in 2 days what Fortnite took 2 weeks to do, get 10 million subscribers.
Fortnite set that up for them. I mean, now everybody knows what.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't have to explain it. Yeah.
But you made the point I wanted to make, which is that Google's news service, which pops up in Google Now and in other ways, whether you're using Chrome or using an Android phone, it's doing it. I mean, I don't want to say more than that
it's
from
much
my position
better.
as a web content creator. I think we all know some information about how well Google News does. And so Apple is going to have to, if it's going to jump into this, they're going to have to do it the Apple way.
Which is the expensive way. It's kind of crazy, though, because Google News does it for free. And Google does an amazing job. This creeps me out, actually. But Google does a great job recommending for me new seasons of things that I've been watching on Amazon.
Google is uncanny when it comes to the news at knowing. Of course, it knows everything, knowing everything I want. It pushes stories at me that I will click. There's no reason in the world Apple should be pushing a golf story at me. This is maybe because Apple puts privacy first. Maybe this is a consequence of not spying on people.
So that's what
maybe they said, well, we think you're an old guy that lives in Petaluma. You must like golf.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing.
I think their sales pitch may very well go in that direction, but it's also got to compete with, really, Apple News' best shot is Google messing up. Acting like an 800-pound gorilla and saying, gosh, be terrible if you as a news outlet lost all these clicks we've been helping you get. I think that really is the thing that, because Facebook sort of went up in that direction, and that has changed.
Look what's happening in Europe to Google at the behest of publishers in Europe, like Axel Springer, who think Google is the arch enemy.
What I know right now is that when we do our editorial operations, we optimize for Google SEO, and how can we get things more visible on Apple News is not a question
a priority.
That we're asking yet.
Maybe it will.
Maybe it will be.
Maybe it will.
We look at both, and they're both important in different ways.
Do they drive traffic?
Apple News?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
What is I mean, you don't have to tell me if you can't, but what's the biggest traffic driver for you at this point? Is it Google Search? Is it Facebook? Is it Apple?
It's Google.
Google Search.
Yeah.
Well,
search with if you include AMP.
AMP is an interesting story.
Yeah. I don't think I'd give
that's the 800-pound gorilla thing on their part.
Yeah. And I'm not fond because, it's a better user experience, but everything has to go through Google.
But that's the thing. I don't know
Google
that people
prioritizes AMP in their search results. Mm-hmm. You get in that carousel at the top of the page. That's a better place to be than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a real power play on Google's part. They pretend it's the open web. It's not.
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting time in publishing because things are changing so quickly. It behooves everybody to be everywhere.
I can remember I was having dinner with a couple PR people in 2006 and 2007, and talking about the frustration I had. I had pitched a story saying, how is Google changing the way we do news? And my editor wasn't biting. And I mentioned this to the PR people, and she looked at me blankly, and she said, well, I don't see how Google's affecting the way the media does their job. And I think about that conversation like once a week.
When was this?
This was like in 2006. And again, I think about this conversation about once a week and wonder where we've all ended up since.
It's so funny. In 2006, I was working for a weekly paper that was really struggling to get on the internet. I was part of the New Times Ville Joyce Media Syndicate.
It was
really pulling at teeth to get any sort of daily blog content up. It was about, why are we not focusing on the print product? That was 13 years ago.
Sam, you impressed me, because I thought you were just like Super Mario Brothers addicted, mm-hmm. and you actually have very deep roots in the real press, in the journalism.
I have been a syndicated published author since 1996, my friend.
I am very impressed. You're older than you look.
I'm 75 years old.
You know, I have a golf and guns article you might be interested in.
Also tanks.
It was like, that's all my kind of stuff. Yeah. Phone and that giant Surface tablet thing.
Oh, yeah. I love this.
Can I get all of your...
this. You want my toys? I got the best toys.
My colleague Richard Hay would cry if he could lay his hands on that. He would love it so much. Awesome.
It's perfect for hosting a podcast. Mm-hmm. At least, or a television show, because it kind of gets out of the way at 15 degrees, but it's big. And if I want to show something, I can, you know, I can telestrate it, and I can do this, and I can draw pictures on stuff, and you know, it's.
Personally, I just want the next HoloLens to let me do that strapped to my face, mm-hmm. and I really do hope that's something that gets revealed.
One week from today. In fact, we'll be covering that as well. 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern time on the 24th at Mobile World Congress. It's expected Microsoft will. To release HoloLens. Now, I see some stories say two, but it really would be three. They just never released HoloLens 2. Mm-hmm.
I think they're just calling it HoloLens.
HoloLens. Yeah. What do we know? What do we think about this? Peter Bright's writing it in Ars Technica. You guys have such great journalists.
The public information in terms of leaks is very thin. I just depend on my birdies between people I've heard from in HoloLens and from Magic Leap and other companies. And it's just basically a question of what the final decision is on the manufacturing line of a wider aspect ratio and a faster chip and the amount of battery and how light and fluffy it all feels. It's really just going to boil down to which market they're going for, whether it's enterprise or whether they're ready for going to that sort of consumer level, buy it at Best Buy kind of thing.
Bingo.
And I really do believe it'll still be on the enterprise side.
Because they've hedged their bets. Initially with the HoloLens, they showed games, they showed Minecraft, they showed shooting things coming through the walls. Of late, they've really focused more on the Windows, holographic Windows, mm-hmm. on business applications, air traffic control, stuff like that. So you think they're going to double down on that and leave the game?
I think you can look at their events where they've taken things like the Surface tablet and some of these other incredibly nice specialized devices that are for specific kind of users to be their best device. And I think they want HoloLens to start out in that similar way so that as that trickles down, kind of like how the Surface Pro took them a while to finally nail, and then that began to trickle down to a more affordable model where now I feel like anyone I know who says, what do you think? And go, yeah, Surface, solid. And I think they're going to keep on that trajectory. They've got that established. And if they can just keep those parts getting cheaper and just, it's that field of view for anyone who hasn't used HoloLens, it really does feel like a tiny little peephole into a virtual world.
Have you used Magic Leap?
I have. I've used them both, and they're very similar in their aspect ratio, meaning if you're not looking directly at the cuddly bunny that's magically appeared on your coffee table, it's not there. So if they can just get that wide enough to where people can suspend enough belief and have an imaginary desktop, because again, that ability, Windows 10 is about to roll out the ability to just take any desktop window and throw it into your VR Windows holographic space. And that's the stuff, that sort of multi-monitor vision to be able to look around and have 20 different website tabs and email things if that's the kind of power use you want. I mean,
sounds like heaven.
Some people love a bunch of monitors. Some people want to keep it really focused. But I love that idea of just breaking open the limit.
You guys are both using old MacBook Airs.
If you take a look at the Microsoft tea leaves, one of the areas they've been devoting a lot of time and attention to over the last 2 to 3 years are their so-called first-line workers.
Mm-hmm.
That's people in retail. Yeah. That's people in healthcare. Those are people who don't have desk jobs. And what they're trying to do is establish themselves as the go-to services, software, and hardware provider.
And that's where Surface fits in, too.
Surface fits in there, and HoloLens will fit in, too, because if they can make forays into architecture, construction, your infrastructure repair and rebuilding areas, again, environmental challenges, things like that. This is where they perceive growth as opposed to back office.
I really like the new Microsoft. It's not a beat I like to cover because I'm not an enterprise guy, but I am so impressed. No, I know. I'm so impressed with what Nadella has done in 5 years, well, completely pivoting the company, and I think finding some real traction.
I think that what you're saying is correct, sort of broadly, which is that Microsoft stands to benefit if they can create something that is really helpful to real people, but is also understandable and will be accessible by consumers.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if whatever Microsoft releases is something that we can all understand very well.
Right.
And that they have, you know, what's interesting is if you go back to the first HoloLens and the reveal of the first HoloLens, I don't know if you guys remember that actual reveal press event.
Yes.
But what was so impressive about it was that they did such a great job with the video that demoed it.
Right.
And as a journalist, the hardest thing about covering VR or AR is showing the audience what it's going to look like and helping people appreciate it, because you cannot capture the experience of being inside unless they do it.
As it turned out, it was a bit of a lie.
It was a little bit of a lie,
but they did a better job.
Yeah.
And I think that they probably learned from that. So I wouldn't be surprised if whatever they do does a good job packaging that again so that people can understand it. And then back to 5G.
That's going to make a difference.
When they're going to bide time, but get out in front of the story enough so that they get their name back in the conversation, leapfrog these other devices that have been out there over the last couple of years, make sure you remember HoloLens, and then when 5G is here and it will make sense for everybody, sell it to everybody.
I think one of the advantages that Microsoft will have is if you're using it at work, it's nothing for you then to bring home a HoloLens and game with it.
Yeah.
Or something like that, too. Just as, and this is, it all loops in, I promise, Google's apps have had a huge adoption rate, especially among younger adults who are just getting out of college. And there are workplaces that are now switching from Microsoft Office over to the Google App Suite because that's what their workforce has come up with. That's what they prefer to use, things like that. And so Microsoft is doubling down on education because it wants to cut off the Google advantage, and it also wants to get back into households.
Apple is trying to do that too. And surprisingly, given the Apple history, kind of failing at it.
Well, they're pricey.
They're too expensive. Every kid I know uses Chromebooks, and that's it.
They seem tone deaf, frankly, to the needs of education.
That's why they have commercials with iPads and what's a computer?
Right.
Yeah. But even those are still too expensive.
It's too expensive. Even at $329.
Google tablets are fine.
So I've been wearing, and some of you have noticed, this black ring for some time now. I got it it's about 6 months ago. It's an Oura, O-U-R-A ring, and it is just fantastic. I first met the founder of Oura through Kevin Rose. He is an advisor. He said, I'll get you one. He'd been wearing it. I said, what's that ring? He said, I'll get you one. You're not going to believe how cool this is. And then we had Harpreet, the founder, on the new Screensavers. They now advertise in the show. I'm very pleased about it. I just got new ring firmware. I probably should update, but I won't do that right now. I'll show you. So this ring ties to my smartphone, works with iOS or Android. It is the best fitness device ever. It has no screen, but that means it can be small. It's very lightweight. It's made of titanium, very tough. I can wear it in the shower. I can wear it when I swim. It tracks activity, yes, because it has built in, it has an accelerometer, a gyroscope, but it also has infrared optical pulse measurement. That's really cool. And it's on your finger, which is the best place to measure your pulse, much better than the wrist. It has a body temperature sensor, which means it's recording at all times your body temperature. And as a result, it is the best sleep monitor, the best exercise monitor I've ever seen. Here's last night's sleep score. I got a great score, 80. I'm refreshed and ready. I can see movement. I can see when I was awake. I had an hour and 52 minutes of REM. 5 hours of light. I had 21 minutes of deep sleep. If I tap on these, I'll get some insights about all this that tells you a lot about what these all mean. For instance, 21 minutes is, you see it's marked in red. That's a little bit low, and they'll even give you some suggestions about things you can do to improve that. I also can see things like my how long it took me to fall asleep. 4 minutes. That's pretty good. I was tired. That's awesome. Sleep latency, they call it. I can see my resting heart rate. this is really valuable because, you know, the only really way to test your resting heart rate is when you're resting. And since I don't sit down very often, it's really good to know that my resting heart rate's actually 55 beats per minute. That's fantastic. It will give you a readiness score for every day based on a lot of things, including heart rate variability. It turns out, and they explain this quite well, that the difference in time between the beats of your heart is heart rate variability. And higher variability is better. So you can see in December, I was struggling a little bit. It had fallen down, but it's coming back now. That tied to things like my body temperature. And these are really infinitesimal differences, less than a degree in most cases. My body temperature was down 1.2 degrees. That's probably why I slept so well. That's a very good indicator. If you're getting the flu, getting a cold, if you have stress or anxiety, it'll start to trend up. All of these things are super valuable in quantifying what's going on with your body and what it means for your day. Today, I am ready. 86 readiness score out of 100. It says your readiness is off the chart. Today's a great day to take it to the next level. They explain what it all means. They even show you a graph of your readiness score over a period of time, which hasn't been all that good. In fact, my readiness score really dipped down in November. Maybe that's why December was so rough. Aura is amazing. You get sleep insights, bedtime guidance that tells you it's time to go to bed now or it's better now. They'll tell you it's time to get a little exercise right now. You can tie it into your Apple Health. So that means when I get exercise through my Apple Watch, it gets imported automatically into the Aura. That's really fantastic, including any information it knows about it. It's readiness insights, recovery optimization. So I know if, you know, maybe it's not time to lift weights today, or maybe this would be a great time to go for a run. Resting heart rate variability, body temperature, respiratory rate. You can have daily activity goals. It'll track activities, steps, calories, inactivity alerts. And this feedback really is the most rich, valuable information I've ever got from any fitness device I've ever used. It's amazing. That's the good news. The bad news is these are selling out like crazy. And I feel terrible because this date has been slipping. When we first started doing the advertisements, I think it was get it by April, right, or March. Now they're out to May because these things are flying off the shelves. One other thing you'll like, read the privacy policy. This is a company from Finland, so they're governed by GDPR. Aura is available in 8 sizes. In fact, they'll send you a ring sizer if you go to their website. There's 2 shapes. There's the round shape or the balance shape that I'm wearing, which has a little a flat surface on it that makes it kind of striking. I love my Aura. Now, charging. It lasts for a week. So you have a little charger base. Looks kind of like this. It is like this. That's it. And you put that on your dresser or wherever. And when you're, all I really do is when I'm showering or, you know, I'm going to, you know, showering's a good time to do it. Brush my teeth. I'll put it on there. 10 minutes. It keeps it charged up. It syncs to your device using Bluetooth LE, so it's very fast. The memory in the ring is up to 6 weeks. So don't feel like you have to pair it or, you know, connect it to your phone every day. It'll take up to 6 weeks of data. So this thing is basically maintenance free. You don't even pay attention to it. It's just recording. Whenever I think of it, I open up the app, copy the data off. The app is free for iOS and Android. And as you saw, the regular updates, in fact, I just got a firmware update. Track your sleep. Make the most of your day. If you're an athlete, if you just want to know more about what's going on, why you're feeling great today and not so great the next day, AuraRing.com, AuraRing.com. $50 off if you use the TWIT offer code. But you have to order now to get it by May. Do it. It's worth it. I know that's kind of, you get excited about something, you want it tomorrow. I waited for a few months to get mine. I'm really glad. Lisa wears it too. AuraRing.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Let's see, last bits of things. The BuzzFeed journalists after the layoff are going to unionize. But Bloomberg told me about it because nobody at BuzzFeed's reporting on that. Does that scare you, Lindsay, as management at CBS Interactive?
You know, it's not.
No.
Unions exist for a reason. And, mm-hmm. and I think that publications who need them will have that come up.
Yep. I'm AFTRA. SAG, too, although nobody's hired me for a movie yet. I'm ready.
You're ready?
I got my card.
You're qualified.
Qualified.
There you go.
I got my SAG card. I'm just saying.
Well, you're probably then in a position to speak specifically to what unionization does and doesn't do. And I think that can get lost in a lot of these stories.
Oh, it's so important.
And it's interesting because ultimately what it's saying for employees, especially in a trade like writing, is the realities of publishing cannot be changed, but employees underneath the top brass want a seat at a bargaining table, right. Mm-hmm. Especially in the case of, well, our decision is we are going to have a bunch of layoffs. So at least there can then be a conversation for those affected of saying, maybe some people want to take voluntary layoffs. Maybe some people want to have that guarantee of a 30 or 60 day notice and a certain amount of severance. And I think that is a thing, the story that is, I think, becoming more well spoken, but it can still get lost sort of in either anti-union or just confusion about it. So I think all this is saying is that BuzzFeed is perhaps the best primed to speak to what they would like at a bargaining table for the case of future giant, wide, out of nowhere layoffs. So,
and I have to say, for an actor's union like SAG and AFTRA, the advantage of having union health insurance when you're in a gig economy is huge. Yeah. And that is one very good reason to have a union. If you're going to be in a business where you're gigging, you know, moving from job to job, you're not going to have consistent benefits. So having the benefits provided by the union is well worth it.
Well, did you see there were two stories that Bloomberg did, I believe a week to a week and a half ago, where a 2016 Google memo got released into the wild among the Google employees? Is this story familiar?
Vague memory of this.
In the first story, it turned out that the meat of the memo was, what are ways we can reduce the expense associated with having employees?
And right. Contracts.
Well,
employees.
No, solution. You're getting ahead of me here. Because in the first story, the two practices that now have employees feeling not very great about Google was they were proposing slowing down the promotion cycle.
Right.
And the reasoning was the employees don't realize that we used to promote on X months. So if we do X plus Y, they won't care and we can stretch out expenses. What this does for employee morale when they've been busting their butt and they don't see anything relative to earlier coworkers is not addressed. Just, oh, we can stretch out the expenses. The second thing had to do with bonuses, because typically Google managers were given a pot of money and it was, please disperse this as bonuses to your employees when they do something bonus worthy as you see fit. There's no schedule. It's highly situational. And HR had noticed that managers often needed to be reminded they had the pots of money because they were very busy being Googlers. They didn't know better. And so HR was like, let's just stop reminding people.
They'll just forget.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll forget. And so Googlers were a little bit worked up about this because it basically comes down to, oh, our company is now slowing down our advancement prospects and adding friction to the bonus. Yeah. The second story that came out was another idea that got floated was, why don't we just make everybody at Google a contractor?
Yeah. And a lot of tech companies do this.
And, there was a piece in Bloomberg again this last week talking about Apple's black site, which sounds much more sinister than actually it was. It really was. Lots of Apple employees get to work in the pretty new building. There's another building nobody talks about where the contractors work.
Yeah. But well, and we saw that story at Google where people were saying, oh, you're not invited to the lunch because you're a contractor.
Yeah,
you can't
exactly.
come to that meeting.
But it illustrates the caste
There's
systems.
There's a real caste system.
Where, you know, employees and have protections that contractors do not.
I actually have a dog in this hunt because I'm both an employer and a union member. Mm-hmm. So I understand both. Honestly, it's difficult these days. It's very difficult to have a business. And of course, you're always trying to cut costs. But there is nothing more valuable than your employees. And treating your employees right ultimately is the best form of business. Treating customers and employees right, that's like 90% of the game.
Sure.
Yeah, I think.
In the end, if you're a human who relates to employees as humans, you're in a pretty good spot.
Sometimes you have to do some pretty inhumane things as a business owner.
Well, one of the things I found so interesting about the BuzzFeed layoffs, in addition to the way they were just drawn out like a
one thing that's inhumane.
But one of the things I thought was interesting were how many BuzzFeed employees were taking to social media to effectively live tweet the story as it was happening, both the ones who were laid off and the ones who were left behind, how quickly they organized a directory of alumni who were going to need work, and then how quickly they organized.
That's
again,
awesome.
All over social media, though, but this was usually with layoffs, you see the numbers, but you don't have people flooding social media to tell you their visceral reactions.
There aren't secrets anymore. And this is another problem. A lot of businesses say, the worst thing that could happen to us is if employees started sharing their income, their salaries.
Yeah.
Because then people would have negotiating power against us. Mm-hmm. And I have feelings on both sides of that fence as well. I think It's actually probably a good thing for employees, not such a good thing for employers who want to pit often want to pit employees against one another.
To that point about social media, that there was a similar layoff story in the games and tech industry this week with Activision Blizzard laying off nearly 800, just whoosh. And there were people who kind of expected it, who had been given warnings as far back as November. But there was also the fact that they said they're not only they're doing a 8% net layoff, but they also said they are hiring 20% more developers, which means more blood is going to be shed beyond that initial 800. So that's a story that's going to keep on going. And the immediate social media reaction was one, mobilization for people saying we've got jobs and we're hiring in the game design world and all these different proficiencies and cities. And number two, a games unionization effort that's just been exploding. There's just been a lot more people on the independent and corporate ladders all trying to band together and create that sort of movement. That's been very interesting to watch.
Let's go in the Sam corner right now with a couple of game stories. Pokemon Go, Niantic, which is a Google spinoff. They were the Google Maps guys who created Niantic, created Ingress. In the process, when they created Ingress, they created used Google Maps to create augmented reality, imaginary locations on top of real locations like the post office and churches and monuments. Pokemon Go played off those same maps. They actually used the same locations instead of Niantic's or Ingress locations, their Pokestops, Pokegyms. Well, there was a class action lawsuit against Pokemon Go from a bunch of homeowners saying that Pokemon Go was leading players to congregate on or near private property. They sued. Pokemon Go creator Niantic has agreed to become more legally responsible. This all started in 2016 when Pokemon Go came out, and you may remember the mobs that happened. I think that Niantic is settling now because they're getting ready for a game that will be even bigger, which is the Harry Potter version of the same game.
Oh, wow.
And it'll have the same locations because they don't create new locations for the new games.
So, no, they've been pulling from Ingress ever since the beginning.
Ingress is
essentially the breeding ground
for
all of that data. And that's why Pokemon Go opened up with a very lively world, because its insane beta testers were all over the United States and other countries grokking it out. I mean, honestly, I would say it's just as simple as them saying we don't have a case. And because Niantic plus all of the other backing they have could absolutely lawyer up and fight this and keep all of that stuff. And I think it's just the kind of thing where they go, yeah, we are profiting off of other people's private enterprise.
It's kind of the right thing to do.
But wait a minute. Like I wish I had a Pokestop outside the front door here. It's not in somebody's house or on private property. It's near private property.
But if you are using the photo of the property and the name of the property, which of the Pokestops and gyms in my neighborhood typically are the name of the business somehow involved and a photo of said business.
Now, Starbucks pays good money to have every Starbucks be a Pokestop.
Yep, they're opting into that and probably getting paid as a result. I mean,
absolutely.
I think there's
allowed to opt in. It's interesting. I have some friends who used to be graffiti artists, and they, you know, not legal
they
at all.
They say used to be, but
not
I think
legal
they
at
still
all,
are.
But really, like, there was a code of ethics around what you tag and what you don't.
Good.
And you can agree with the code of ethics or not, but it was roughly, if it's public property, i.e. paid for by taxpayers, it's fair game. If it's a private home or a small business, do not do it. And I think that that's kind of like, you don't tag,
door,
or you don't tag somebody's like bakery, right? And so the idea, that idea is kind of like what's going on with Niantic here.
So here's an example of one of the lawsuits.
Make someone's grandma a place
the residents of the Villas of Positano, an oceanfront condo in Hollywood, Florida, during the height of the Pokemon Go phenomenon, would wake up in the early morning hours to hundreds of players behaving, quote, like zombies, walking around, bumping into things. We've had to redefine what trespass is in the digital age, literally. Mm-hmm. And Pokemon Go, the Niantic folks said that upon complaints of nuisance or trespass, you might want to keep this in mind when the Harry Potter game comes out. Upon complaints of nuisance or trespass and demands of the removal of a Pokestop or gym, the company will make commercially reasonable efforts to resolve the complaint and communicate a resolution within 15 days. I'm sure they'll take it down, right? Oh. Owners of single-family residential properties get rights of removal within 40 meters of their properties.
That seems fair.
Yeah,
that seems fair to me.
Niantic will maintain a database of complaints in an attempt to avoid poor placement. When, this is my favorite, when Niantic's system detects a raid of more than 10 players congregating, A warning message will appear on their screens reminding them to be courteous and respectful of surroundings.
That's just like actually, the one that pops. There's one that pops up when you're in a car. If it senses a movement of 15 or more miles an hour, it'll say,
Are you a passenger? Are you a passenger?
Are you a passenger? And the driver just taps,
Every time you start Pokemon Go, it says, don't trespass.
The restrictions on single-family residential properties and the warnings that pop up, there was a really great story on Curbed. I want to say either late last week or the beginning of this week. Curbed is a publication that focuses on real estate, does long-form essays. And there was one where a woman was talking about how a friend of hers who lived in a beautiful house in Savannah, the friend was going through chemotherapy. And was very, very sick. And there was an influencer posing in front of her house
and on the porch
and jumping around. The influencer posts something on her social media all, I don't know why the owner was so grumpy when I was taking pictures. She should take advantage of her location and set up a mimosa stand.
Oh, please.
But what it points out is the idea that for people who have built up these AR-type environments, and I would argue that Instagram at this point is basically AR.
Sure.
For people, they forget that people live in those houses, and those are their private residences, and you are interrupting their lives, and they are not props in your little world-building exercise.
I feel that influencers forget that in public places are not. I mean,
I think we should just line them all up against the wall and shoot them. Influencers are not good in any respect whatsoever.
So is the greatest Twit influencer of them all.
Not
me!
I got a really nasty look in the gym locker room because I walked behind a woman who was posing.
I'm Instagramming here.
Who was Instagramming in front of the mirror in
which
the locker room.
Which is probably breaking no cell phone.
My gym bans mobile phones in the locker room. You're not allowed to bring them
all
out,
gyms
which is
doesn't
great.
Doesn't stop anybody.
Yeah, it was. I was just kind of like.
I complain. I'm a mean woman. I'll complain. But, you know, this, it's, I think that's going to be one of the things that people who, the, especially digital natives and those of us who have become digital natives by default are going to have to remember is just because you have this bubble of information and experience as you move through your world with your tech, your bubble is going to bump into other people's bubbles. You're going to overlap and they have just as many rights as you do. And you're going to have to remember that.
That's a really good
Next
point.
Time you hear Tom Jones, it's not unusual and you're tempted to put a cassette in and play that song, grab a candlestick and sing along. Get ready, everybody. I want you to do the Carlton dance.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone.
Unfortunately,
it's not unusual.
Carlton got bad news this week. The Carlton dance is not copyrightable. He was suing Fortnite. Because you can buy a Carlton dance. Do they call it the Carlton dance?
They do not call it the Carlton dance.
Well, Carlton himself admits he kind of borrowed it from Bruce Springsteen Dancing in the Dark video and other places. Carlton, of course, is played by Alfonso Ribeiro. I think this is over now because the copyright office said you can't. Sorry, kid. It's not a choreographed routine. You can't copyright it. There were
I think his case may be over, but I do not I do believe that the idea of these microtransactions in games attached to real life anything is going to continue. I think people will continue to push whatever public image they have and cultural cachet in order to say, hey, you are profiting off of my likeness or something that's singularly like me and you are making money and I'm not getting a cut and I was not reached out to for a license. I think that's not necessary. It may be more clear cut in certain cases than others. There was just recently a suit filed by a WWE superstar whose likeness seems to be in the latest Call of Duty game in terms of his just facial structure and general presence, and that he's not in any way being compensated and whether or not he deserves to be paid when he may just innocently coincidentally resemble. Because so many works of fiction have that all similarities are coincidental and blah, blah, blah.
The NBA has been dealing with this for a while, too. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got the same kinds of conversations going on with likenesses of sports figures.
It's tattoos. So, for instance, the tattoo artist owns the tattoo. These NBA All-Stars are allowed to play games in the NBA with these tattoos, but when those same All-Stars are rendered as a likeness in NBA 2K, the tattoo artists are saying, wait a minute, that's my copyrighted work in your game.
Oh, that's interesting.
They could eliminate that just by making them not
I think different. It all has to do...
But then I just give it a 6.5 out of 10 review.
Exactly. Sam would say those tattoos are not accurate.
You can't be Iguodala without the wing.
But I think this is in the digital entertainment world, microtransactions are going to be only bigger and bigger and bigger, especially as emerging economies are completely linked into payments through phone currencies, where you are going to a convenience store, for example, in Japan, which is mostly a cash society. Mm-hmm. That's you're going and paying cash to get the card and loading that and buying points and getting all these little things. So when you say that this might be the last of it, I 100% disagree that our digital future includes all of these cute little purchases of cosmetic bits. And what's more interesting in a cosmetic way than things you recognize? That's why games like Super Mario Maker, where you make your own levels, the most popular things in that game that people create are based on other real life properties. Like, that's just how this weird future of how we pay for things online is going to play out, and games will be on the forefront of that. So I think this is going to continue being a big legal conversation.
Tiny, incremental, and frictionless.
Tiny, incremental, frictionless.
That sounds like my love life.
Oh.
I quit.
That just shut down this conversation entirely.
Oh, my.
Sorry. Yeah, about to file suit.
I don't even know what I was going to say. It's just
but we do have a show title. I am grateful to you for calling that out. So what about, so there were two big games this week. It's so funny because people hate Electronic Arts, right, Sam? They hate it. They hate it. It's the devil. It's Satan. It's this, it's so.
They've had a bad reputation for gobbling up companies and then having those companies do different things
than
they did.
People are so pissed off that EA has a hit. But of course.
I disagree about them being. EA has a hit. That is definitely true.
This is Apex Legends. Just came out, as I mentioned earlier, already 25 million players.
Was like 5 days ago they said 25 million. So I imagine that has only grown.
It's a battle royale game. 100 men come in. 100 people come in.
60
only one,
people come in.
60?
It's
not like Fortnite.
Here's what I think Apex Legends did. For all of the people, mostly between the ages of like 13 and 18, who don't play Fortnite anymore because it's not cool and it's for little kids, they get Fortnite. They did play it, and Apex Legends is cooler. So they're all in.
It's funny, though. It just shows you, because it looked like we were doing stories 2 weeks ago that Fortnite was the future of social media.
Yeah. I was just thinking that as I was reading all these stories about how Fortnite is the new shopping mall for teenagers.
Oh, no, but no, because teenagers, like...
They're fickle.
6 months ago... Yeah. Actual teenagers were like, that's for 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
So that's right. A 16-year-old says that. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Number one, Fortnite is still doing great. They still have a ton of players, and that will eventually end, and everyone knows how fads work. I think Epic Games, the people who make Fortnite, are absolutely gearing up for that, and that's why the game changes so much. Yeah. That's why it has these seasons. But Apex Legends, what it did, EA had a pretty smart move. They took a bunch of people who go on Twitch and YouTube and stream themselves playing games and said, we're going to pay you cash to just play this game all at the same time. And then those people, once that money stopped, kept playing the game and said, I'm having a pretty good time. You guys developed a solid game. Mm-hmm. And everyone could kind of see that instead of a year, 2 years of hype and expectation and questions. Because if EA came out, and in fact, some of the people who worked on this game said, if we put out a press release a year ago and said EA is going to make a game with loot boxes and microtransactions and it's battle royale, the forums and everything, there just would have been this giant wall of resistance. So instead, you get this game that just shows up and people playing it and saying, kind of like it, gonna keep playing it. It's free. It's on Xbox. It's on PlayStation. It's on computer. The friction is so low for people to just jump in. And it has a really genius thing in the internet age. It's pinging. The idea is that anywhere you look in the game, you tap a button and it announces to your friends in the game, here's a thing, a weapon, an item, a path you should go to. So you can play without using a microphone. You can mute idiots on the internet and play and have a good time.
Oh my gosh, that is like a value. They should charge extra for that feature.
Every single game, I swear to you, every game from here on out that's internet dependent is going to do this little thing of called pinging, which is a term that we've used in way different ways than in gaming. But it's genius. It was really smoothly done. EA is kind of incredible in how they pulled this off. And they're about to launch a game that's kind of the utter opposite. That's kind of a mess and a disaster and overhyped and under-delivering. So the
what's fact that?
It's called Anthem.
Oh,
and that's made by a company that did games called Mass Effect and Dragon Age.
People have been very excited about this. You think it's terrible, huh?
I'm working on my review as we speak. I'm basically when I'm not.
I think we
talking
know where
to
it's
you,
going.
it's a problem. There's some problems with this. It's a game that has beautiful ideas. You get to fly around like Iron Man, and it feels like you're Iron Man. You get in a jetpack and you fly over a giant world, and that's cool. But the game has nothing but roadblocks. Apex Legends, you can just jump in for free, and it instantly feels cool. This game is the opposite, where you have to pay money, and you're waiting and waiting, and it's slow. And clunky, and it feels old. And it's just interesting that EA said, we're going to put both of these out at the same time. Yeah. What's that going to look like? Yeah. If I worked on Anthem, I would be furious because I've got this other thing I have to juggle from my corporate parent just bringing me down.
You buried the lead, though. Now Tetris has a Battle Royale mode.
Tetris has a Battle Royale. Did you ever want to play Tetris with 98 other people? Probably not. Yeah. But that now exists, and it's actually incredibly fun. I wrote up a piece that sort of analyzed what it does. And I think this is going to trickle down in other games in the future. But the briefest way to put it is it adds a sort of machine learning difficulty, meaning these other 98 people you're playing against, you don't see them. You're focusing on your own set of Tetris blocks, which are already doing the random things that make it hard. You know, you get that Z piece when you want a line, that sort of thing. Well, now it's got this sort of automatic challenge of other people throwing what are known as garbage blocks at you. So you get this sort of extra little organic spike of challenge if you don't just want to play some chill Tetris by yourself. And I think for a game as old as Tetris, that's a risk they can take. I don't know that every other genre should have this, but it's this really brilliant thing, and it's free if you pay for Switch's online service, which is $20 a year. And that also comes with a bunch of classic NES games for free. So Nintendo has come out to fans of games and said, you're getting classic NES games and you're getting a new trippy Tetris for $20 for a year. And I really do believe that drove people to say, oh, hey, Nintendo, you're normally behind on the times with online stuff. Oh, this is actually kind of sweet and novel and clever, and I'm going to pay that very small amount of money for classic gaming. So really smooth move on Nintendo's part and all. I've been playing this Tetris game. It's working. It's not crashing. I'm having a good time. I'm really good at it, so that helps.
Yeah, I was just going to warn people.
It sounds like the way they do weighted grades in law school where there's the curve and like one or two people per class gets an A and then it goes down from there and
well,
everybody
Red's
is psyching
the a,
each other
apparently.
Out.
Watch all out. I know is watch out for Sam Red on Tetris 99.
I thought I was really good at Tetris. Yeah. Like I used to play like crazy a long time ago, and then I played with my daughter on a plane, like on the seat backs, and we were playing against each other. And it got to a point where I was like, this isn't fun anymore. I don't want to play. I don't like it. And she's like, do you want to let you win, Mom?
Oh, that's
it was I just brutal. Want to put something out there for the listeners who want to know about a world of an intense competitive Tetris. There is a 16-year-old kid who is currently breaking world records left and right. His name is Joseph Saley, S-A-E-L-E-E. I encourage you to look him up on YouTube. He does things with NES Tetris that I never knew were possible. He's got a method called hyper-tapping. Go down that rabbit hole if you want. I swear it is
fascinating. I'm pretty sure that my daughter did that because I was like, how do you even know how to do this?
She's
how
been
have you
watching
ever played
YouTube
this?
Videos.
No, she goes, oh, I just watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm using the Saley technique.
This kid has reached level 33 in NES Tetris with nobody thought was possible. That just happened like 3 nights ago. And he's just hanging out in his little house and his family.
This is a new kind of Twitch, I got to tell you. Is this on Twitch?
Yeah, he's got the whole screen that he's got set up like adapts the board so it looks right. I'm obsessed with this kid.
He's not even looking at the screen.
Yo, he'll look over at the chat over to the side just to make sure he talks
to
his Twitch people.
I don't even have to think about it anymore. It just happens. Yeah, look at this.
Yeah.
This is what your daughter's doing.
Yeah, she's watching him play and then she's just killing me on the airplane Tetris.
I'm so glad I could talk about Joseph Saley. He's the best. He's a really sweet kid too.
Well, on that note,
unbelievable.
We will wrap
we're just
this.
Entranced.
We're all watching this kid. I can't believe it.
I want to see Tetris meets Minecraft.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well.
This is the thing. I have to say, Lindsay, is that this your kids and this guy, it's not even the same species.
Oh, watch this. Oh, he didn't do it. He has a tuck method. Sorry. Sorry, anyone who's listening to the audio.
Oh, he needed to use that tuck method, man. Oh,
his tuck method is beyond compare. I'm so glad I get to talk like this.
Slides a piece over into a little hole that's just kind of
Oh, yeah. He can do all these weird. Yeah,
oh,
he can do.
Oh, man.
He's got some weird T-spin things and all this.
I swear to God, this kid's not even thinking about what he's doing. It's just biological at this point, right? It's just.
Well, he's got a whole bunch of brain circuits completely dedicated.
Dedicated. He's got look at this. He's not even looking.
The spatial.
He's not even looking.
The spatial intelligence is just off the charts.
That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I have almost no spatial intelligence whatsoever. So this is like pops and whistles and dolphin noises as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, your video editor should have fast forwarded to the part where he gets up to the very max, but that could take forever.
Oh, I can jump ahead. Is that at the end of the video?
I'd say a little bit back. Go back a little bit.
Back. Okay. Oh, he just finished.
He's clutching all right, his heart.
Here we go. Yes,
he's doing hyper tap. He's hyper tapping, ladies. I can't believe it. Is Saley doing the hyper tap? Yes, he is. He's moving in. Watch his tuck method. It's incredible. Oh my God, it's moving faster than I can even keep track of.
The fact that he could do any of that. The
level is so high. It's in hexadecimal. Oh, my
thank
God.
You. Thank you for humoring me.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of this very strange journey that we've been on. But you know what? I wouldn't want to be with any other three people in this fellowship of the weird. Thank you so much, Sam Maskovich, for joining us. Sam writes at Ars Technica. He's their tech culture editor. He has to run off and write his Anthem review.
Off in a jetpack.
Fly off in a jetpack. Sam Red on the Twitter. And stay away from Sam Red on the Tetris because he's... Killer. Thank you, Sam. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Happy to be on with you.
Lindsay Turrentine, despite her title of VP of Technology Content at CBS Interactive, has deigned to come into this room and join us and get into the trenches.
So fun to be here.
You're a big shot now.
Yeah.
I can't even talk to you anymore.
Yeah.
Lindsay, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What a smart panel. I am just so thrilled to have all you folks. Schmeiser, always a pleasure. Lisa Schmeiser. Now, you're still editor IT pro today, but you're focusing on enterprise mostly.
Yes, yes, I am.
No more of that Windows secrets crap.
Well, I wouldn't call it crap. We had a lot of really talented writers who did a great job of ushering the readers into the mobile first.
There's no more secrets.
I feel like it's...
There's no more secrets.
I'm not going to run down my successor, though. Come on.
Secrets are over. Everything's public now. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So great to have you, Lisa. itprotoday.com. Thank you all for being here. We had a great studio audience. Thank you for joining us. I know it was a bit of a marathon. Yeah. I hope you brought sandwiches. And I did offer you whiskey, I think, right? Okay, good. They have their Starbucks instead. It's really great to have them. From Michelle and David from Manteca, California, Travis and Beth from Los Angeles. It's kind of a romantic thing to do on a Sunday afternoon. Come watch Twit. Oh, boy.
It's not raining today. The drive is lovely.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. If you want to join us, all you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. You can also watch a live stream of everything we do at twit.tv/live. Choose from audio or video. You can, if you can't watch it live, you can always get on-demand audio and video from our website, twit.tv. Of course, the best thing to do, let Daniel Ek know we exist. Subscribe to the show on Spotify, please. That won't help. Again, nothing he wants. Or your favorite podcast application. I don't mind. Pocket Casts, Overcast, iTunes, Google. There's a lot of great ones. We have the information at twit.tv/subscribe. Subscribe to our newsletter while you're there, too. You'll know ahead of time all the great things that are coming to Twit in the week ahead. Thanks to our producer, Costin Bondi, our executive producer.
Who would like to remind you to plug the survey.
Lisa Kensel, Lisa Laporte, I married her. That's one way to save money. Google didn't think of that.
Yeah.
You just marry your employees, then you don't have to pay them anymore. That doesn't work.
It's some weird
doesn't scale.
It's hard to scale. Yeah, so I was going to say, that does not scale well.
Yeah. I saw a Big Love. I know how this ends.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you run out after a while of houses. We do have a survey. We do this once a year. We ask you to take it only because it's the best way. We don't track you. We don't know anything about you. We don't want to, but we do like to have some information about our audience. Advertisers like to know, is there male, female, what ages, things like that. So it's very simple demographic questions. We also like to know a little more about what you're interested in so we can tailor our programming to fit your interests. The survey is quick, take you a couple of minutes. twit.to/survey. No salesman will call. I'm sorry, twit.to/survey19. It's the 2019 version. I know you do. You did this. Did you do the census already? This is much easier than the census. twit.to/survey19. We're not collecting any information about you. It's all in aggregate, but it does help us very much to plan our year. So thank you in advance. And thank you for being here. We'll see you next week. Another Twit is in the air. Bye.
Doing the Twit.